Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
wondering what happened to us, but last week a lot of things that kicked down, you know, thing called life. Anyways, Boxing Scene's official radio show, Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my host, Gabriel Montoya and Ernesto Gavillon. Both guys should be calling in a short bit. I know they're running behind. There's a couple of fights that are happening. The boys are going to be covering and stuff. Anyways, I don't know, man, I got out of my coma. I was, you know, out of it for almost, I would have to say, a little over a whole week because of what I witnessed on a Saturday night pay-per-view on Golden Boy. Sergio Mora and Shane Mosley going at it put me to sleep, you know, and it had me in this trance for some time. It took me a while to shake it off, you know, and when you don't got good fights coming up, when you don't got anything to really kind of shake off that trance, you're just going to keep you in that little lazy mode for a minute. So, hey, it took me a while to shake it off, but now I'm back. We got some great fights coming up, you know, next month in November. It's going to be stacked, you know. Here on the news right now, undefeated junior middleweight James Kirtland was released yesterday after violating a parole, you know, getting caught with a gun. Let's just be honest. He got busted with purchasing a gun, you know, and there's already some talks of Kirtland going back into the ring under the Khan and Miadana undercard, which should be good to see the kid back in action because it's really been anticipated to see James Kirtland to get back in the ring. This guy really resembles a whole lot of a young Mike Tyson. Gabriel had a chance to interview him. As soon as Gabriel calls in, we'll have a chance to, you know, kind of find out what was the hear and say between him and Kirtland. Interested in hearing what he's got to say. Love to get him on the show to talk to him a little bit. I heard that, you know, Ann Wolf may not be there to help him, you know, keep training. I don't know what happened there between the two of them. I'd like to find out a little bit, maybe get some info. Maybe he broke it down a little bit to Gabriel in their interview about why they're not going to continue. If that is a decision from Ann Wolf department, why wouldn't that, you know, keep going? And it seemed like they had a tight relationship, but it could have been because of, you know, Ann Wolf is a religious person. I had a chance to meet them both in San Jose on his last fight when he fought Joel Julio. And when I had a chance to speak to both of them, really, really respectable people, but you could tell religious when James Kirtland was preparing and sparring and working out on the Media Open workout, they had they had, you know, Christian music playing. So, that's something right here. They had some cute Christian music playing. So, you know that she tried to surround him and made sure that he was going to walk down the path of righteousness. But, hey, man, you know, when you grow up in a tough area and you're born and raised and you still got homies that are still residing back where you're from, it's sometimes a little hard to shake that up. It's sometimes a little hard to, you know, not want to go back because you don't want to be known as the guy that forgot where they came from. You know, you want to stay within your roots, the ground that you know, where you prosper from. So you always try to go back and rewater everybody that's around you and make sure you still got that, you know, credibility among the streets, among the people that you grew up around. But sometimes, man, you just got to let it go because those people don't want to see you prosper. Those people could envy you. You know, there's a lot of people out there that don't like seeing people move up on the ladder because they're not moving up. They're at a stall. They're at a stale right now in their lives. They're not doing much. So they're looking at this young brother saying, look at this cat, man. He's doing everything. People are talking about him. They're saying he's the next big thing. Chirp a little bit in his ear. You know, throw some poison down there in his brain and make him, you know, sidetrack himself and kind of veer off the road of the track that he was on, he was destined to finally make, and they end up putting a roadblock. Now, I'm not putting all the blame around the people that were surrounded around him, but you got to put some blame there because, you know, a young brother trying to move up in the game, you know, everybody's pulling him from everywhere, you know, in every direction, sometimes can get in the way and mess you up where you don't know what is right and wrong anymore, you know. But now let's see what finally what happened. Now that he had a chance to sit in a prison cell again and really kind of just look at life, because now it's put a halt. Now it's time for him to slow down. Now it had, you know, hopefully be incarcerated and made him kind of grow up a little bit and look at what he had and what he lost, you know, within a blink of an eye. So that hopefully there we see James Curtin get back into the ring, handle his things. We got a good show, man. We got a lot of people coming through. We got Sergio Martinez calling in. You know, actually, it's not going to be calling. It was pre-recorded because of the fact of last week. We were going to have that interview with him last week, and it didn't happen. So we had to pre-record it, okay, because I didn't want to miss the opportunity to hear what Sergio Martinez had to say about Paul Williams when we had Paul Williams on 2 weeks ago. And he had a lot to say. We asked him a lot of questions. We were able to really have a chance to kind of pick his brain about what he thinks about the whole going down to 157 catch weight with Paul Williams and his thoughts about it, you know, and him being on vacation for so long, what was going on there? Was his mind not into the game? This whole celebrity thing kind of messed him up a little bit? I don't know. So a lot of things. Now you got, you know, other news, man. You got Angulo. They're talking about, you know, trying to deport him back to Mexico. And a lot of people have got mixed feelings about this, you know. And I know some folks are saying, hey, he ain't paying taxes. Send him back. Get him out of here. You know, there's rumors of what's going on, what happened. Gary Shaw saying, you know, I can't, there's nothing I can do. I don't believe that. And I'm going to tell you why I don't believe it. Because Gary Shaw has put so much money invested in Angulo. I highly doubt it's going to allow him to go, you know, jump ship. Now, HBO, you know, the thing about, this is the thing, man. And hopefully Gable calls in because we had a pretty good conversation about this whole HBO turning their back on Angulo. And you know, there's some good reasons why they did it, but then the morality about it is, hey, listen, they backed up other fighters that were in worse positions, you know, meaning that, you know, I know a lot of people, we keep, you know, bringing up Antonio Margarito, but look at, they're going to have a pay-per-view fight. It's going to be hosted by HBO, and it's going to have Manny Pacquiao and Antonio Margarito, but then you got a kid that doesn't belong here, didn't get his visa, okay, and whatever the case is, why he didn't get his visa, I don't understand. He had a whole camp, you know, and himself to go get it. But rather than dropping him, I'm not really understanding why they didn't help him try to go get that visa. Why didn't they back him up, you know what I mean, and say, hey, listen, we got a star in the making, a kid that's going to come to fight. He brings excitement. People like him. Let's help them out. Let's you know, get on top of their team to try to get the visa, try to kind of fix the situation, what was going on with Angulo. I don't get it. I don't see why they didn't do it. I mean, there could be other reasons. It could be the fact that they're like, look, we got so much crap, you know, on a, you know, stacking up piles and piles of paperwork because the state of boxing is so in shambles at this moment. There's just too much red tape. There's too much ink, too much paperwork for us to do. We're going to pass that on. That could be the most reasonable reason why they decided not to help out. I don't know. You know, if you want to call in and talk to me a little bit, 347-215-7598, go right ahead. Hey, Glenn Johnson's in the Super 6. We got the Road Warrior. Road Warrior is going to be taking the place of Mikel Kessler. Since Mikel Kessler had an eye injury, he's been pulled out. That was a fallout. Everything was like, you know, oh, man, what happened with the Super 6? It seemed like such a good thing seemed to be falling really, really fast. You know what I mean? It's almost like, you know, you wanted this car so bad, you know, you were saving all your money, and then finally you bought the car, and it breaks down the first month you have it. That's basically what the Super 6 was. You had, you know, something was so great. We were all talking about it. We were all pumped up. We needed this so much in the sport, you know, but we neglected to see that this is six different personalities, six different promoters and managements that We really neglected to see that, were they going to be able to work together? Were there going to be injuries? What was going to happen if there was going to be somebody injured? You know, that not the proper steps were negotiated or made up with the Super Six. So, unfortunately, we're in the history of watching them, you know, kind of work their way through it. So we're watching everything they're doing, all the mistakes, all the trips, all the falls, you know, all the BS. We're there with them, and we're seeing it. And some fight fans are being, you know, turned off. And I don't blame them. Some of them are being pretty pissed off about it. What can you do? You know, all I say is we got to cope with it. We got to sit there and really kind of just go, hey, let's weigh it out. Because the Super Six was something great, something good. Now you got Glenn Johnson. Well, Glenn, and, you know, I had a couple fight fans, man, emailing me. And they're saying, yo, Glenn Johnson? Really? Glenn Johnson? I'm like, you know, man, he's a tough guy, tough veteran. I think he's, what, 38, 39 years old? I'm not really sure. Dave, our producer, Dave, he's working the switchboard. So if you guys want to call in, Leave It in the Ring right now, you can. 347-215-7598. But, you know, I think the guy's, I think he's ready for it. I don't even remember, man. These guys, man, you know, we got the old timers here still pushing, still fighting, you know, showing the young bucks what the real deal is, you know, with these younger fighters that are ducking each other and talking about, I want this amount of money. And we'll talk about Andre Berto right now in a minute. But you got fight fans, like I said, they're like, man, really, man? Glenn Johnson, couldn't they have picked somebody else? And I'm like, you know what? That's kind of hard to argue about. I mean, you got some certain, you know, points there. Couldn't they have gotten somebody out? I mean, Jean Pascal, we already know, is going to be getting Bernard Hopkins. But, I mean, they probably couldn't have persuaded him out of fighting Bernard. Because the fact that he's going to be getting good monies, just fighting Bernard Hopkins. So I could see why they didn't approach him about it, you know. But they could have before, you know, right after the Chad Dawson. But Chad Dawson even himself had said on Leaving the Ring and on other websites, hey, I can make 168, you know. Let him come down. Since he can't get a rematch right now with Jean Pascal, why not make him, you know, get in the Super Six? You know, Chad Dawson would, you know, he's a young guy, young buck, and he's got a lot of proof. So it would be a good tournament for him. Then you got Psycho Bika, who is one of these wild cards in anybody, any division. You put him 160, 168, even up. This guy's so awkward, and he's strong, and, you know, he could really, really put an earthquake in that division. He could make a lot of eyebrows kind of lift up and say, we got something here, you know. There's a lot of guys that they could have went through. But the more logic choice for Showtime, and this is what I'm looking at, is that this is a guy that's more easier to sign because of the fact that he's at the tail end of his career, and he's not going to really negotiate, and he needs us more than we need him. So they signed him on. And that, to me, is probably the reason why they did it. They decided to sign them on. And look, guys are throwing Lucian Boutte. You're absolutely right, Lucian Boutte. He could have done it. You know, the problem was that Lucian Boutte from the beginning had shown no interest. You know, I think Lucian Boutte and his team are kind of looking at, hey, we'll get the winner of the Super Six, and it'll be a big money fight. It'll be a mega fight, which I don't blame him. Now, Andrade, another good guy, durable guy, slow, durable, strong guy, comes to fight, you know. But then again, you know, they looked at Glenn Johnson's a little bit more of a showcase name than Andrade. You know, where Andrade's still a lot of, if you're not a hardcore fight fan, you're not going to know who the Mexican kid from Jack in the Box is. You know, you're going to be like, who's this vato? What's this guy doing in here? Where Glenn Johnson, guys are going to remember him. Guys are going to say, oh, that's the guy that knocked out, you know, Roy Jones Jr. People that don't follow the sport, they're only going to look at, oh, hey, that's the dude that knocked out Roy Jones Jr. This is a good fight. They didn't see what happened with them when he fought, Cloud. You know, so many things they could have done with Super Six, but it's a learning process, I think, for them. You know, it's really honestly, we're kind of seeing these guys kind of struggle and work out the kinks in what they're doing. You got the Super Bantamweight, which is, I love it. I can't wait for that to happen. You know, you're going to get Vic Darchillian versus Ander Mares, and then you're going to have, Adebeko versus Yanni Perez, which is a rematch when the last time they fought, it was on Halloween, October 30th, and it was a war. These guys went back and forth, you know. So you got that bantamweight, man, and I'm stoked up about it. The only thing I don't like, and you guys heard me rant about this, is that it's in Mexico. I don't get it. I don't understand why they're throwing it up there. You know, Yanni Perez has got a good following in SoCal. So does Andemaris. You know, and so does Victor Chinian. There's a lot of Armenians in Glendale, California. They could have brought a lot of people to SoCal and sold out stadiums out there, you know, rather than have it in Mexico. But hey, what do we know? We're just hardcore fight fans that follow the sport, right? We don't pay for anything, supposedly, you know. We got the promoters and we even got fighters telling us what is good and what is not, which is funny to me because I thought we were the consumers. I thought we were the guys that pay for everything. I thought me and you were the guys that made superstars because we pay to watch whatever they do. But they know more than us. Right? I don't know. You guys tell me, man. Like I said, 347-215-7598. Got a first guest coming through. Yoan Guzman. Going to talk to him a little bit. Should be in by 5:30. Talk to him about what's going on in him stepping up again back into the ring. What's going on with the weight issues. Basically, what's going on, period. What's been happening with Guzman? You know, everything was good with Guzman, and all of a sudden, things just kind of fell apart. You know, a lot of things, man. Chris Martin got San Diego kid. Chris Martin coming through. Kid's been, you know, he's the one that upset it, you know, Avilos, and he's doing pretty good. I heard he's a CEO for a prison. That's something different, something new, huh? That's a different angle, man, coming in as a fighter, you know. Anyways, man, Dave Chen, check the switchboard, see who's calling in, man, and see if we can patch in some fight fans right now, chop it up a little bit about boxing, and we'll see if my other co-hosts are going to call in. I know that Gable is on the train right now. He's in down underground in the subway or something like that, he was saying. I don't know what he's doing. So hopefully he'll call in right now. But let's patch in. Oh man, we got a familiar name right now. I believe we got Antonio Diaz. What's up, brother?
Hey, hello.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
What can I do for you today, brother? Welterweight. Go ahead.
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. We're over here, you know, talking a little bit about what's happening in the boxing world. Hey, I heard that they're going to give your brother a shot at Canelo. Is there any truth to that?
You know what? I really don't know. I guess they mentioned something about it. I heard it from, his manager. He mentioned it, but... You know, I've been trying to push that fight with Canelo for myself, you know?
Well, I don't understand. Why would they want your brother, who's not a natural walkway, to move up and face him? Why didn't that, why aren't they asking you?
I think what it is, you know, they're trying to bring him up. They're trying to bring Canelo up with fighters that are lighter than him, you know, like they did with what's his name, Cotto. You know, I've been asking for the fight for the past, you know, all this year since mm-hmm. he started supposedly hitting, he was good.
So, and what? Let me ask you this, you know, because you obviously got a name. You've been in with a lot of the great fighters from Shane Mosley, etc. You know, you were in with Victor Ortiz. That didn't sway your way and all that. But why wouldn't they want to pick somebody that is a more natural welterweight, that somebody that can really put in work for Canelo? Why would they want to go after the kid?
Because they don't want to risk it with a natural heavy puncher welterweight. They want somebody who's a lighter weight, you know, not as heavy in the punch, and they don't want to risk him getting knocked out or something. You know, if for example when he fought Cotto. Cotto's a 135-pound fighter, if not 130, small guy. Fight him at 150, you know. He hurt him in the first round. Now imagine if he fights a full-grown welterweight.
You know, Tony, what I'm wondering is, okay, this is your brother. Let's say this fight does look like it's going to happen. Does he understand that he may not have a fighting chance with a bigger man, and that's what they're basically looking for him to do. It's just to use him as a padding to pad another Golden Boy fighter's record.
You know what? Let me tell you something. He clearly understands that. But let me tell you something. Julio is a fighter that he, you know, he's a big fighter for a 140-pound fighter.
Right.
You know, he's a big fighter for 140. He's also a big, he was also a big fighter for 135. You know, the only thing with him, him and I, you know, we always push ourselves to drop our weight and get low in weight to fight, you know, smaller opponents. Cause, you know, we're built, you know, we're not big built like other fighters, but we have thick legs and, you know, big upper bodies. Julio's a strong 140-pound fighter. And you know what? Every time he spars and trains, he's always using 154-pound fighters, 160-pound fighters, and he's always hurting these guys. You know, I'm pretty definitely sure I'm willing to bet anything. I put my house on the line that if he was to fight Canelo, I'll put my house that he'll beat Canelo.
Hmm. But you don't want that to happen. You want it to be
to
beat Canelo.
No, exactly. If they go that way, you know, I'm definitely sure my brother Julio will beat Canelo. But I'm the one who's looking for Canelo, you know? I really want that opportunity to fight Canelo and prove that he's not what the whole world thinks he is. You know, Canelo Alvarez is fighting all these fighters that are from out of this country, you know, with great, great records. But look at the opponents.
Right.
You know, I was looking at some of the fighters that he's fought. For example, not the fighter he just fought, Cuello, in Mexico. The one before that, you know, some guy from, I guess, Argentina, he had an impressive record. I guess he was undefeated or had one defeat. But I was looking at his record, and I looked at his opponent's records. Man, these guys are fighting guys that have, like, one win and 17 losses. And, you know, it's like, where are these people getting these type of fighters, you know?
You know what? I know what you mean, man. I mean, we've seen this a lot of times in boxing where guys have these, you know, exceptional records that they have so many knockouts on there, but those knockouts really come from who? Who did he knock out? And
exactly.
Canelo's one of those guys, too, where, you know, I'm not sold on him completely yet. I like what I've seen so far, but I do want to see him in with some, you know, tougher competition. I know after he fought Baldemir, I put it on the Twitter. I said, hey, I'd like to see him fight like David Estrada, you know, and then when your name was brought up, I said, hey, that's a decent fight right there, fighting against Antonio Diaz. That'd be a good fight right there, you know, to see where the kid really stands being at 19 years old. Now,
exactly.
You know, what I'm not getting, I mean, how do you go about to get him in the ring? I mean, obviously, you got to go to Golden Boy, right?
Exactly. Golden Boy is the one who says, you fight him or you don't.
And have you had a chance to speak to Golden Boy? I mean, have you had a chance to sit down with the team of Golden Boy and, you know, say, hey, listen, you know, give me a shot. Not my brother. Let me have the shot. I'm the bigger guy, you know. I've been in with, you know, some of the best. Why not? Let's find out. Let's see if this kid boat really sails down the stream.
Well, you know, I haven't done that, but my manager has done it. He's mentioned it to them a lot of times, and they haven't given him an answer. Up to now, they haven't given him an answer. Now, when they mentioned Julio fighting Canelo, I guess my manager mentioned, because Julio's manager is also my manager, their excuse or their reason was that I can't get Canelo right now because I come from a loss. You know, supposedly I come from a loss. I need a win in my record. But, you know, yes, I come from a loss, but look at what was the way of my loss. I lost by a cut. You know, the fight was just barely picking up with Victor Ortiz. I'm a veteran fighter that starts picking my pace up after the fifth, sixth round. And I was just picking up my pace when, unfortunately, I get cut in my eye and that fight has to be stopped.
Man, that kind of sucks, you know. They basically tell you, well, you lost. You got to do something else. Wow, man. I don't know what to tell you, brother. You know, it just seems that, I mean, I hear what you're saying about your brother. You're saying, you know, he can beat him. But I'll be honest with you, Tony. I don't see that happening because he's such a smaller guy. You know?
Yeah,
I know
he's
had a great run. I see he's had a great run so far, but I don't see him really, you know, I see him just more as another stepping stone for Canelo.
Yeah, I really don't see that, man. I've seen Canelo. We've seen Canelo. As a matter of fact, we saw this last fight with Baldomir. You know, let's look back at this last fight he had. He fought Baldomir. This is a 40-year-old man who's way out of shape. You can tell right away on his body structure.
Right, right.
He was way out of shape. But, yeah, every time he was throwing the right hand was coming like at 2 miles an hour, and it was hitting Canelo, you know? And
right.
Canelo was only throwing one punch, two punches, one punch, one-two combination. He wasn't throwing many combinations. And Baldomir was coming with one or two-punch combinations also and was tagging Canelo. Now, if you have a fighter out there that can throw three, four, five-punch combinations, he's gonna tag. You're gonna hit Canelo, and Canelo you could see that he can't take a punch when he gets hit a good shot. That's what happened when he fought Cotto. Now, I think Canelo for the first time when he fought here at the Morongo Casino in Calabasas, he fought Larry Mosley. Larry Mosley hadn't fought in a long time. You know, they chose Larry Mosley to fight Canelo Alvarez for the first time. He's showing up here in the United States. You know, Larry, it was a close fight. Canelo won the fight, but I really thought, you know, Mosley won the fight. And that's after taking a long break. He came back and fought Canelo for the first time.
You know, that whole talking about Canelo on his fight with the older brother, Miguel Cotto, Jose Cotto. And he gets rocked. He did say that, you know, it was a little bit of nerves, a new scenery. He was caught off guard, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you buy into that? I mean, do you believe any of that? Or do you believe, yeah, there's some truth to it, or no?
Oh, of course. He's going to say all that. He's just, like, for example, me, if I'm fighting, I get dropped. I'm going to say, oh, I was off balance. Oh, I was. You're going to find an excuse to let them know that you're not, that you weren't hurt, you know? But I don't buy that. You know, I think he really got caught, because if it was this, you know, he wouldn't have been holding right away right after he got hit, you know?
I got my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, with me. What's up, Gabriel?
Not much. Good evening to you both.
We got Antonio Diaz. Hey, Tony, brother, thank you very much, man, for calling in and letting us know what you want, man. And hopefully, you know, Golden Boy hears this and we'll do whatever we can to try to push you to see if we can get you in with Canelo, brother, because that'd be a good fight for the both of you guys to see. Really, I know that people are going to say, hey, he's at his end of career. Are you at the end of your career, or is Canelo just rushed? That's what everybody wants to be answered.
Yeah, I think Canelo's just being rushed. Me, I don't think I'm at the end of my career. You know, I took a three-year layoff, and then I came back after 3 years, and I did a couple good wins. You know, my first fight was for that WBO Latino title in Florida, 12-rounder. That was my first fight back. I didn't even take a tune-up or anything. I just came strong for straight at a title shot. You know, I felt good. I felt rested. I let my body rest. I let my body recuperate from the long run of fights I had. So I feel that you know, I'm starting another chapter in my career.
Well, let me ask you this. Go ahead, Gabe. Go ahead.
I'm curious. What is it about Canelo's game that you can take advantage of? That you've seen?
You know, I just seen he's a fighter that tries to go in there cocky, try to show off. I don't see much power in his punches. I don't see, you know what, I just want to get a shot at the guy. And another reason I want to get a shot at the guy is because he has, a WBC, silver championship. And I've always dreamt of being a WBC champion. Right now, with the WBC World Championship, I guess Berto has that title. I know it'll be a lot harder for me to get to one of those titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I'm pretty sure, you know, that would be a great way for me to get a title, one of those WBC belts, you know. Since I was a little kid, I always looked up to those titles, and that would be a good opportunity for me to get one of those titles there. And Canelo Alvarez has that WBC silver title, which is the same. You know, they're the same belts as the real WBC title, but I've always wanted to have one of those in my living room.
Let me ask you this, because when you go back to the Victor Ortiz and you said, listen, I lost, but look at the fashion that I lost. I got my eye was cut. And like you said, you took 3 years, you got, you know, your body rested. But Tony, is there any question, can your face hold up to the punches though? I mean, with that cut, that was a pretty, you know, nasty cut. Does your face texture, can it hold up to the abuse of the gloves now? Are you guys worried about that?
You know what? I'm not worried about it. You know, that fight, yeah, you know, I got cut. I got cut because as I came in, he threw like a little right jab type hook, and he got me sideways, and that's what opened up the cut. But I've had my other fights, you know, I got hit pretty good on my other fights, and nothing happened. You know, nothing
right.
happened, and I didn't get cut again, or nothing happened to my face. So, you know, I'm definitely sure that nothing would. It won't happen again. You know, my cut healed up very good. I went to the doctor. I went to a plastic surgeon. He checked it out, and after I came back, and it was healed very, very good, very well.
Well, man, like I said, you know, I wish you the best, brother. I hope you get that fight. I hope, you know, even if your brother gets the fight, I hope the game plan is going to work for you guys and be rooting for you, brother, in the future.
You know, if for some reason... If it's true that they want to give that fight to my brother, it'll be a great fight, but I think it'll be a greater fight if I were to fight Canelo. You know, it'll be a fight that the fans will really, really, really love to see, because as everybody's seen me and knows me, I'm an action-packed fighter. You know, I like action. I like action fights. You know, my brother's a very good fighter. You know, he's a good, very good, smart fighter. He's a boxer. You know, boxing is about hit and don't get hit. And that's the way that's his style. You know, my style is, you know what, give me two and I'll give you four. Give me three and I'll give you six, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's I like to fight.
And the bottom line is, you're a welterweight and your brother's a lightweight.
Not exactly.
Exactly. See, but like I said, you know, they're taking care of this kid. Of course, they're not going to want him to fight a full-grown welterweight because there's chances that he's going to get hit harder. Than a lightweight. I mean, a junior lightweight or lightweight. You know? That's why he's choosing these smaller fighters. Yeah, they chose a middleweight for the last fight, but look at the middleweight they fought. Poor guy.
Well, and he was a career welterweight, too. I mean, he's a middleweight because he's getting old, you know? And you know, to me, I always look at Canelo's development just because he's so young. He's 19, I think barely 20. And I don't think he had any amateur career. And so we're...
Exactly.
A lot of these guys, I mean, you had a nice amateur career. You did it the right way. A lot of these guys, we have to pay to watch their development, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of painful. I mean, I think he's a quality fighter. I think he can be grown into something. But maybe they're just afraid of putting him in with somebody that's dangerous with real experience, because you've got a punch to boot, you know.
Yes. You know, when I fought Victor Ortiz, I knew I was gonna be in a tough fight for the reason that, you know, he had came from that loss with Madonna and stuff like that. But I expected for him to really try to prove to the fans that he wasn't, you know, that he was gonna be back in the game. And I thought I really, really, really expected for him to come and show the fans that a good fight. I really thought he was gonna get there and swing it out toe to toe and try to prove, like I said, to the fans that he was still a good fighter. But when I went in the ring and the bell rang and I saw him going back and being cautious and never, never, ever wanted to come forward and exchange, I was like, oh, man. And then, you know, another thing with Victor Ortiz, he's a left-hand fighter. You know, he's a lefty. And I've always struggled with lefties. You know, even when I fought Corey Spinks, I struggled with lefties, you know. But with a right-hand fighter, I don't have no problems. You know, I fought all these right-hand fighters, tough warriors, and I've been able to, you know, escape from their punches.
Do you think he got Camacho'd? Like the way after Camacho was after Edwin Rosario? Do you think Ortiz is like that now?
You know what? I don't think it's that much. I just think that Ortiz is more cautious now. You know, he's being more of a boxer than a brawler puncher. In the beginning, you know, before that Madonna fight, you know, I think they hyped him up too much, where he tried to prove to the fans, and they brought him up too quick. You know, I think that's what happened with Victor. You know, they brought him up very quick, and when the fight came, that was his first main event fight, and I guess he felt the pressure. He had to give the fans a great fight, so he went in and did something that he wasn't supposed to do. He's always been a boxer since the amateurs. He's always been a smart boxer, but before he had a little bit more action. Now he's just on the outside. Even this fight with Vivian Harris, you know, he fought smart. He stayed on the outside, never went in until he hurt Vivian Harris, and then he went in.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well. Yeah. Well, you know, Antonio, I like I said, man, I hope you get it because it is an interesting fight. I think it's a fight that people would honestly, you know, back up behind because the fact that is that Julio is not a welterweight. You're a welterweight, and you're obviously a much more of a test to get in with Canelo to see what he's all about than anybody else.
People are going to probably want to say, you know what, he wants to get a payday. It's not about the money, you know. I will fight Canelo for free, for nothing, just the opportunity. You know, all I want is just the opportunity to get in with this guy and show the people that, you know, that he's not what people really, really, really think about.
Absolutely, brother. Okay, man. Well, again, Tony, thank you very much, brother, for calling in.
Thank you, guys, and for giving me this opportunity, man.
Hey, thanks for calling in, brother.
All right, no problem. Thank you. Have
a good day.
All right, talk
to you later. You too. You know, I'm sorry, brother. Go ahead.
No, I'm just cooling down after my commute. That was brutal. Sorry about that.
That's all right, man. That's all right. You know, the rumor is that his brother's going to get a shot at Canelo, which is a lightweight guy. Jumping up, and he's definitely got it blown up. And you know, Tony's saying, hey, my brother's got a shot. He can beat him. And that's what you call brotherly love. You're not going to pick against your own blood. But realistically, I wouldn't give his brother a shot in that fight. Just because the fact
either.
That he's going to have to blow himself up. He's going to have to do something that's not normal for him, meaning that he's going to have to concentrate to get bigger rather than concentrate on what's, you know, the game plan of beating Canelo. Where Antonio... you know, that's a good fight. You got a guy that wants to mix it up, a guy that comes forward, a guy that's a little bit a step behind of what he was before, but still is dangerous, still can bang and hurt you if you're there at the right moment or right time for him to land something big. That's a good fight for me. That's a good test for Canelo, not Julio Diaz. I love, you know what, and don't get me wrong, Julio, I love you, brother, but that's not a good fight for you. I think you need to stick to where you're at to continue your streak rather than jumping up for a bigger payday to fight a guy right now that is a big, you know, he's a big kid. He's 19 years old. Look at his legs and his neck. The kid's neck alone looks like he's a, you know, junior middleweight.
Yeah, he's going to be a junior middleweight at some point, you know, maybe even bigger. He's still growing, you know. He's a young dude. And, you know, I think I ran into Julio at the Angulo fight a while back. And, you know, he's just got a lightweight frame. He's just a thin dude. I mean, they're about the same height, but, you know, it goes to that thing of there's weight classes for a reason and dudes fight at certain weights for a reason. It's just because, you know, your body can either handle weight or it can't. And you know, Julio is a career lightweight. And I would be really surprised if they made the fight. I mean, I understand that they're kind of developing him much the way that, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez was developed, and that no amateur career, we got to be real careful with him. But dude, I mean, that's, you know, it's almost like the Paul Williams claim in reverse. It's like, I'll fight anybody from, you know, middleweight to lightweight, but I'm going to weigh welterweight, though, when that happens. You know, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It just seems like a step back, and it's not a diss on Julio, because all the Diazes are good fighters.
Right,
you know, that's a fighting family right there. But But, yeah, I agree with you. He'd have to have a serious game plan and stick to it. And it would kind of keep away from what Julio or Julio does well, because he can bang, he boxes, but it sets up his power. In this, I don't think his power would translate. I don't think it would matter at all in this fight.
The thing too about this, and you're absolutely right. Where to a lightweight guy bringing up his power and it's going to be difficult. But this is the thing I wanted to kind of throw out there is that. When you're building a fighter, of course, and a guy don't have an amateur background, it's not that deep, it's not that extensive, you got to maneuver him correctly. But when you blatantly do it in the open, like basically you're not even really kind of hiding it, you're just like, let's give him a flyweight, put in a flyweight in there. You know what I mean? It's like, really? Come on, man. I mean, give us at least try to fool me a little bit. You know what I mean? Lie to me a little bit, And that's where I think that's where you go into where Bruce Trampler was good at. He made sure, hey, listen, we got to protect this kid. We still got to build him up because he's a young buck. Let's do this way. You know what I mean? That the trick trade. He used the tricks of the trade. He made sure I got me a durable guy that still got a little bit of left in him and can give my guy a little bit of trouble, but it's for sure he's still going to lose and make my guy look great. Where in terms of they're giving him a guy that has a winning streak, but he's a lightweight. He's a small guy, and he's got everything against him. He's not going to bring up his power like you mentioned. He's got to move up in weight. He's got to, the dietary that he's used to, he's got to change it. All that can be an effect of messing up your body, where it's not going to function because your body's not used to that extra pounds when you're stepping in the ring.
Everything you just said, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And again, I understand that they got to develop him and stuff, but I thought the Baldemir fight was kind of a step up in terms of, you're fighting an ex-champion with experience that, was never really the most dangerous guy on the planet, but he was a classic spoiler. And if you weren't on your game, he would give you some trouble, and really, he gave Zab Judah trouble, who's a classic not on his game fighter on certain nights, classic hot and cold guy. But really beyond that, he beat the shell of, Arturo Gatti, rest in peace. And then that was it. That was pretty much the end of the run. So with this fight, but at least there was experience there and he was, a bigger guy, and the thing was, I always kind of laugh to myself when you hear over and over again the announcers say about a fight or the lead into a fight, this guy's never been stopped. That usually means, tonight he's probably going to be stopped. And that was the case in that fight. In this fight, I don't really see what the challenge is. Because to me, matchmaking is about, when you're developing a guy, you bring in certain guys to bring out certain aspects of your fighter. Show him things that he's not faced so that he can find a new test, learn that, and move on and build his tool bag. And in this fight, I guess maybe he'd have to chase down Julio a little bit, who would be kind of boxing and moving. That could be a challenge. But there's plenty of guys, at the junior welterweight that you could bring up or at welterweight that you could track down. Why not find, a Corey Spinks? He's coming off a loss, but he's a classic mover. Why not get him? If you still want to go developmental, and show him some sort of lesson, then go that route. To me, Julio Diaz, man, that's just kind of, I hate to be negative, it's just kind of insulting to everybody involved. But, that's just me. Did Dave disappear? It got awfully quiet.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I put myself on.
Okay.
I hit the button, my bad, and stuff. No, I agree with you, there's a lot of good things happening. There's a lot of good things happening in boxing. We're going to have a great November where, keep your fingers crossed that everything, happens the way it's supposed to. Then it's going to roll into a fun fight fest in December. But there's things in boxing where you kind of look at it and go, oh, man, come on, man. Paulie Malignaggi signing with Golden Boy, what is that all about? What is the purpose of getting him on,
To me,
I mean, let's be honest. I don't have a problem with it, but, some people are looking at it like, oh, Paulie got signed to be a stepping stone. That's it.
That's the thing. I mean, it's a slow month. You know, don't I know it? You know, I have to write pieces every week and look for a story. But here's the thing. I mean, I think with Twitter and the internet, it can be very positive. You know, with people kind of sharing information at a high rate of speed, but it also, what it's done is taken away from, if we were in a newspaper, let's say, you know, my James Kirkland piece would have been the headline in the boxing section. Paulie Malignaggi being signed by Golden Boy would have been a tiny footnote in the news and notes section. But because of the internet and stories kind of come out one at a time, you know, obviously, as they always have, that becomes a huge buzz and everybody talks about it and it trends. And it goes crazy, and everybody makes a big, huge deal of it. You're exactly right. He was signed to be an opponent. Whether they have a plan to get him a belt from some European champion that nobody's heard about, and I would actually throw out the warning, nobody heard about Dmitry Pirog either. You know, here's the thing, or Andrei Skatelnik, who actually turned out to be tougher, or Marcos Maidana. You know, sort of the unknowns are even more dangerous than you realize. But, you know, all he's being brought along is to kind of feed their stable, just like Vivian Harris was. And whether or not he was given a good deal, good for him. I think all fighters should make good money. And, you know, good for Golden Boy for treating the fighter right. But it's not a major story, not in any way, shape, or form. I thought Paulie was done for a few fights. And to me, Lou DiBella is a guy, I'm not even going to get into what Paulie said about him or their little thing. But Lou showed to me in the Jermaine Taylor fight and with the Paulie fight, it was kind of like, you know, it was kind of letting them go, and not their fights, but letting them go, that he's a guy that kind of knows when his fighters are kind of done. It's like, I'm not going to try to squeeze out every last bit of blood and money out of you. You know, he's just not that kind of guy. At least he doesn't strike me that way. And those actions show that. What Golden Boy's doing, you know, they picked up Vivian Harris, who I thought was shot, you know, a long time ago. And then they kind of, I don't know, sort of rebuilt him because of the quick stoppage and the Matisse fight, and then they throw him in there. That's just not great. But at the same time, Golden Boy is a very young company.
Very young.
And they're growing. And so there are certain things that they do that you kind of have to give them a pass on. They got to pick up some talent. They do have to pick up a B-side. You know, we'll get to that later. They do have to pick up a B-side like Bob Arum does, you know. So Bob Arum does it differently. He develops the B-side. And they're young, and so they haven't had a chance to just yet, you know. They're more in the free agent game. I kind of looked at them as like an expansion football team. You know, you got to have to sign a bunch of free agents early on, pick up some dudes that maybe you don't want but that are serviceable, and so you can grow into a 20-, 30-year company that becomes a fight factory, you know. Hopefully they become that.
You know, that's what we're hoping. And that's, you know, I'm sorry, you know, the PRs of Yoan Guzman is texting me right now. They're saying
that's okay, dude.
They're going to be bringing them on. You know, we're hoping for that. You know, we're hoping that they're going to evolve and they're going to do exactly what is needed in the sport. All these new promoters, you know, and stuff.
Not
but
monopolize it, right?
But yeah, I'm not. Well, you know that's we're gonna hold that conversation because we did invite Steve Kim for next week to be on, and you know, I'd like to invite a couple other people because there's something that in that interview, that short interview that Oscar De La Hoya did, you know, talking about Golden Boy and wanting to take over. There's a few things in there that there's a few holes in there that I want to fill up, and I know some fight fans are a little curious about what exactly was he was saying, or was it misinterpreted or what. But what I do want to talk about,
he was definitely not. He wasn't misquoted this time. Definitely was not misquoted this time.
He wasn't lost in translation at all. No, you're absolutely right. And I tell you what else wasn't lost in translation. You got Andre Berto, and I'm glad you brought up the whole Twitter thing because I think that Twitter should be restricted to a certain amount of fighters, you know, when they're on there asking the fight fans, hey, who should I fight next? Why are you asking if you can't fight them? What is the point? Asking fans if you can't fight these particular fighters, Berto. I love you, Berto. You're a good guy. We've had you on tons and tons and tons of times. But please, Stop letting your fingers do the talking, because you're not getting those fights. We know you're not going to get those fights. You're going to get Freddy Hernandez next rather than getting Luis Collazo. Come on, get real. And people saying that that's a good fight. It is. I mean, that would have been a good fight 2 years ago, maybe even a year ago. But right now, no.
Define good fight. I mean, good fight can be many things. You know, it's going to be a good fight for Berto, I'll tell you that. You know, it could be action. You know, Freddy Hernandez is an action guy. And Berto's, an action guy. I mean, he generally does not bore me as a fighter. You know, I would say that about it. But at the same time, this goes back to everybody, and Steve uses the term microwave. Everybody wants a microwave success. And with Berto, it's like, I understand the Haiti situation. I've been over this a few times, but Berto says he didn't take step-aside money. Well, I've got several sources that say that's not true, that he actually did take the step-aside money. But regardless of that moment when he turned it down, there was, they could have done it again, and they turned down 60-40. And I'm sorry, but you're not, you're worth 40 right now against Shane Mosley. Sometimes you got to take the short money to put an ex-champion like that on your mantle. And that's probably what would have happened after the Mayweather fight when they were discussing it again. And they had, according to Mosley, they had an agreement regardless, win or lose. I think it was if Mosley won, he was going to be tied up in a rematch with Floyd. But if he lost, they had agreed to, I think it was still like 50-50 or 60-40. And then, they started haggling and all this stuff. The
right.
Bottom line is you're not that big of a name. You did a Haiti benefit in your hometown, and you sold less than 1,000 seats. That speaks to who you are as a draw. You're not a draw.
Right, and it goes, we were talking, the whole conversation of Antonio Diaz, the whole Canelo, and, he's trying to, they're trying to patent up. They're trying to get enough fights, and really Canelo needs the fan base in the States. That's what they're trying to do. We had Paul Williams on 2 weeks ago, and we were trying to explain that to him, and you mentioned something on a private conversation with me just the other night, Gabe, and you said, the numbers that they look like it's going to be happening for Paul and Sergio Martinez was what again?
This is the thing. They're not using the whole room. Steve actually emailed the thing. I'd heard the rumor. We were both trying to figure it out. He showed me the seating chart. They're paring down a 16,000 seat. And this is the comparison I was making, because the story came out that Cowboy Stadium can hold like 100,000 people. Bob Arum is paring it back to 70,000 seats, roughly, 60,000, 70,000. Martinez Williams, their place can hold somewhere between 15,000 and 16,000, and they're paring those seats back to like 6,800. That kind of shows you that, when these guys, and these are actually two Al Haymon fighters. He's very connected to HBO. His fighters get very well paid. Andre's going to make about $1 million to fight
right.
Freddy Hernandez. It was a $1.2 million site fee for that, or license fee. What's going to happen there, with these guys, they don't fight in their hometowns very often. They don't fight near their fan bases. And Andre did fight near his fan base, but they haven't really built him up in that area. And then on top of that, he's not fighting the most scintillating competition in the world. So he's not being built into a draw. And that's the thing. Back in the day, you would make a big payday because you could bring the gate. Nowadays, it's like the networks don't even care about the gate. They just throw money at it, and these guys make money like a draw, and they think they're a star.
Right, right.
And they're not.
Really quick, I got Z, are you on the line?
Guzman is on the line.
Guzman, how you doing, brother?
Okay, hold on. Let me pass him the phone.
Okay. Z, are you there?
Yes,
hello?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay, Yoan, are you there?
Sí.
¿Cómo estás?
Bien, bien, bien.
Bien, bien. Gracias para tener el tiempo para hablar con nosotros aquí en Living in the Ring. Mi nombre es David Duenes y también tengo mi cojo, se llama Gabriel Montoya. Nosotros vamos a hablar en inglés y ella va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to be straight up. Where have you been?
¿Dónde has estado? Esa es la primera pregunta que tiene Dave.
Primero he estado en mi casa entrenando y esperando el tiempo para la pelea en Nueva York.
I've been in my house training for the fight in New York.
You know, he was really talked about in terms of his skills, and he looked at he was gonna, you know, do something very big in the sport of boxing. But then something happened. Can you explain to us what happened with the weight issues? He wasn't making weight, and all of a sudden he just stopped fighting completely.
Hola, Juan. Joan, se comentaba mucho de ti antes sobre tus habilidades boxísticas y se esperaba que lograras algo grande en el deporte. De momento, algo pasó, empezaron a haber problemas de peso, de pronto no estabas peleando tan frecuentemente. Él quiere saber qué fue lo que pasó.
Bueno, primero hubo un tiempo que yo me desconecté, y me desconecté de boxeo porque tenía a mi mamá enferma de cáncer y le había dicho a mi mamá que no quería boxear, que mi mamá no quería que yo boxee, y estaba medio quitado de eso y no estaba 100% el corazón en boxeo, sino que ya estaba peleando sin la motivación, porque no quería que mi mamá se diera cuenta que estaba peleando.
Well, there was a time where I was disconnected from boxing because my mom was sick with cancer. She didn't want me to fight, and so I just stopped and I disconnected myself from the sport. I was still, you know, fighting, not frequently, but my heart wasn't 100% there. I was fighting with no motivation because I wanted to hide from my mom that I was still fighting.
Now, Joan, you've had trouble with weight. Does that speak to that you just weren't quite as motivated or having the right camps, or you just simply, as you get older, your body's naturally moving into another weight class, and you don't realize it until you don't make weight?
¿Quieres saber, habías tenido problemas con tu peso, no? ¿Se te dificultaba hacer el peso? ¿Eso es por el mismo problema pues de tu mamá, que no estabas motivado y por lo tanto no estabas entrenando como debías, o era por el contrario, que según uno va envejeciendo, ¿no?, el cuerpo se va naturalmente va migrando a un peso más alto y uno no se da cuenta hasta que empieza a tener dificultades en bajar de peso?
Tú sabes que eso también puede influir porque el tiempo que tienes sin pelear y problema, y también me estoy poniendo mayor de edad, eso influye mucho en esas dos cosas. Por ese lado, yo tenía todo en contra mía. Tenía problemas de hormonas y tenía problemas personales. Entonces, cuando se unen esos dos, ya uno no sabe qué va a hacer. Por eso no notaba yo 100% en boxeo como estoy ahora.
Yeah, he said that can definitely play a role. He spent a long time without fighting, and add that to the personal problems that he had, plus the fact that he was getting older, all that influences. So he had a problem with hormones and the, you know, natural aging process, and also the personal problems. So, you know, both of them together contributed to that.
Now you're in a new weight class again. You're one of the most skilled fighters I've ever seen fight, a defensive, you know, master. Is this going to alter your style? Do you have to do anything different as you move up, or you're just going to refocus and show up in shape and be Joan Guzman?
Eres uno de los boxeadores que él ha visto con más talento, un maestro del arte defensivo. Él quiere saber si el subir de peso va a cambiar tu estilo. ¿Te afecta en algo,
o sea,
estilo de pelea subiendo de peso?
Bueno, no creo que me vaya a afectar, o sea, como uno siempre está bajando de peso, ya es otra categoría, nada más solamente otra categoría, y los peleadores que siempre ponían excusa que va a pelear con Guzmán, no, yo no quiero pelear con Guzmán porque no hace peso, ya en otra categoría no pueden decir eso porque va a ser diferente.
No, I don't think it's going to affect me at all. It's just a different category. And I think that, you know, all the fighters that used to say, no, I don't want to fight with Joan Guzman because he doesn't make weight, they don't have that excuse anymore. That because he's in a higher weight category now.
You know, after what basically happened, you know, he's left. The fight fans have been really upset with him. Does he feel that he needs to come back with a banging performance as an apology to fight fans for the weight issue, you know, not being able to make it with Nate Campbell?
Después de todo lo que pasó, la fanaticada está un poquito decepcionada y frustrada contigo. Dave quiere saber, ¿tú piensas que por eso ahora en esta próxima pelea tienes que regresar con una exhibición espectacular como muestra de... Como diciéndole a la fanaticada, pues siento que todos estos problemas que hubieron en el pasado, sobre todo cuando no pudiste hacer el peso con Nate Campbell?
Bueno, de verdad yo siempre me he disculpado con todo el público, de verdad me sentí mal porque mucha gente esperaba esa pelea con Nate Campbell y mucha gente esperaba que yo iba a hacer el peso con Funeca la segunda y de verdad le pedí mucha disculpa a mucha gente, a mi manejador, a mis promotores, a mí mismo me tomé un momento para pensar en la carrera mía ya que eso es lo único que yo sé hacer y tengo que hacerlo bien.
I really, like always, apologize with the fans. I felt very bad because I know people were expecting me to make the weight with Nate and with Funeca the second time, but I always apologize with the fans, with my managers, the promoters, and also with myself. I needed to take a time to rethink my career.
Where do you think you fit in? You know, in terms of the 140, 147 picture, do you think you can get to the elites, or is it going to take time to build?
¿Dónde tú crees que te encuentras en la 140, 147 libras? ¿Tú crees que estás listo para niveles elite, o crees que eso te llegará y te va a tomar un tiempo?
Bueno, yo estoy, como digo, yo estoy para pelear ya con quien sea. Ya tengo mucho tiempo aquí buscando peleas grandes y ya ahora mismo en boxeo hay pelea en cualquier peso, 147, 140 libras. El mejor, cualquiera que quiera pelear conmigo, yo estoy abierto. Ya yo estoy abierto a pelear con quien sea. Ya la gente sabe que yo tengo la calidad, tengo el talento, lo único que estaba fallando en algo y voy a remediar eso, pero después yo peleo en cualquiera de esos dos. En esos dos pesos, todo el que venga.
He says that he's ready to fight with anyone at any level. He has spent a long time already looking for fights, and right now in the sport, because there are big fights at any weight, 140 or 147, so he is open to fight anyone. He says people know that he has the skills, the quality, the talent. He failed on something, but he took the steps to fix that. And he's ready for anyone.
What do you know about your next opponent? Have you seen tape of him? Or do you even look at tape when you're preparing for someone?
¿Qué sabes de tu próximo oponente? ¿Has visto videos de él? ¿O siquiera ves videos de tu oponente cuando estás preparando para las peleas?
Eso es lo primero que hacemos, el equipo, el manager mío y yo, lo primero que registramos el peleador, lo miramos los videos y ya comenzamos a mirar los videos. Es un peleador fuerte y ha perdido de peleadores que no son malos, que la pelea que tiene perdida han sido con buenos rivales, que sé que él viene en busca de algo que yo tengo.
Yes, that's the first thing that I do. My manager and I sit together and look at the videos we have done so already. Watch videos. I know that he is a very tough opponent, and the fights that he has lost them against a very good opponent. So, you know, he's expecting a tough fight.
What is he doing to, and this will be our last question because I know he's got to go, what is he doing to really honestly make sure that he carries the weight properly? Because, you know, his last fight, he didn't seem like himself at all, you know, it didn't seem like he was fluent at all.
¿Qué es lo que estás haciendo para asegurarte de que pues vas llevando bien el peso como debes? Porque en la última pelea no pareciste tú, no pareciste tan fluido como usualmente eres.
¿Cómo fue? No te entendí ahí.
Dice que él quiere saber qué estás haciendo para asegurarte de que haces el peso, de que vas llevando el peso apropiadamente, porque él piensa que en la última pelea te viste diferente al Joan Guzmán de siempre, no hubo tanta fluidez en tus movimientos.
Bueno, porque esa pelea la cogimos 3 semanas y media antes y después nos movimos a England a entrenar. Entonces, moviéndonos para allá, prácticamente para esa pelea nosotros entrenamos 3 semanas, y en 3 semanas no, yo no me iba a poner en perfectas condiciones. Entonces, quedé un poquito, que si me había puesto bien en condiciones 100%, creo que había hecho mi peso y ya no quedaba poneca.
Okay. Now he says that what really happened in the previous fight was that he took that fight 3.5 weeks before, then they moved to England to train there. So effectively they only had 3 weeks to train, and in that period of time it wasn't enough for him to be in optimal condition for the fight. He says, if I would have been 100%, you know, in good condition, I feel I would have knocked out Ali Funeka.
Okay, well, you know, tell him thank you again for having the chance to speak to us. Like I said, I know he's got to go. It was a pleasure speaking to him, and we wish him the best of luck.
Muchas gracias por haber hablado con ellos. Saben que te tienes que ir, pero fue un placer tenerte en el show, y bueno, te quieren dar las gracias.
Bueno, gracias, y gracias a ustedes todos por el soporte, y lo esperamos el día 5 de noviembre en Amory.
Thanks, he says thanks to all of you and the fans for the support, and he expects everyone on November 5th.
Well, there you go. Gracias, Guzman.
Gracias.
Okay.
Gracias.
You know, wow. I mean, he's talking going up to 147, Gabe. I mean, what do you think about that?
I'm not crazy about it. Is Z still on the line? Just wanted to let her go. All right, maybe she hung up. I'm not crazy about that. I think he could. His frame. I forget which fight. It was Cintron Williams. I was sitting ringside, mm-hmm. and I'm watching this one guy, and I forget which fighter it was. Now I'm looking at this guy's face, his corner man, and I'm like, boy, that looks like Joan Guzman. But that can't be him. The guy looks like he's a light heavy. Like he's a light heavyweight, you know. And he didn't look fat. He looked like he could carry it. But after a while, I was like, wow, that is Joan Guzman, you know. And he really been blown up. And I don't know. I mean, he's got kind of a big frame. He's a short guy. I think maybe he could carry 140. Obviously, he can't make 135 anymore. He doesn't have a big punch. He was taking people out early when he was fighting at the smaller weights. Now he's more of a cutie or a fancy Dan, as they say. He's got a lot of defense and no power. But I don't know how pleasing that is for crowds to watch. I'm certainly I have to pick and choose the guys in which I like that style. But I don't know. I mean, it's weird though. I mean, you look at 147, which isn't that stacked anymore, but 140, which is really stacked, and it's really hard to get all these guys to get in the ring. They're finally now all starting to fight each other. But I don't know. We'll have to see. You know, when a guy is defensively skilled like that, has that amateur background, I tend to think this guy's kind of the limit for him. You know, that he can kind of go up and find ways to win. But what it sounds like is the motivation wasn't there, and that, you know, because of his mom too, that he was his focus wasn't there. If his focus is 100%, I mean, that's a talented dude. He was a blue-chip prospect. People expected really big things from him in his career, and then it got derailed. So if he gets that focus back, I mean, that's a world-class athlete. Maybe he can do some things. I don't know. We'll have to see.
History has really shown it to us where a guy that sometimes could be very effective in a division that he belongs in, when they tend to leave that division by jumping a little bit two up north, you know, when they decide to do that, it has limited them. It made them normal, you know. With Yoan Guzman, it leaves a question of him is, okay, you were great defensively. You look great in the weight that you debuted in, and the weight that you were making a lot of noise. Is it a good idea to try to jump up so many different weights and decide to do something that may not be in your best interest? You're not going to make the same ruckus that you did in a division where you looked fantastic. And made it just you know, fighters that jump several weights in their careers is when they're in their late career. They're at the tail end of the career. And they go, you know what? I can't make this weight because I'm getting older. I'm making it up to my 30s. I got to leave this division. I might as well leave this division, go to the bigger guys, get some bigger money, and then retire. That's when you do it. Not when you're in the peak of your career, then fall off the face of earth and come back. I understand about his mother, but then come back and go, hey, I'm going to move up because I can't make the weight no more.
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, everybody's kind of different. And you know, some guys in their prime, you know, do weight jump, you know, from Hank Armstrong, which I still got to answer my question on give the answer on Twitter for my trivia question, from him to Manny Pacquiao to Floyd Mayweather did it, Roy Jones. I mean, it's been done, but usually those guys accomplish something in each of those divisions. They don't just – his was weird. It was like all of a sudden he didn't make weight, and then, like you said, he just kind of fell off, and that, now we know what, you know, what, why. It's interesting. I mean, there was a guy I was reading about today, though, and it wasn't a weight issue, but it's an old-school guy. He was a lightweight champion from 1956 to 1962 named Joe Brown. His nickname was Old Bones. And Joe Brown, for most of his career in the beginning, was not that good of a fighter. He was kind of up and down. He was kind of a more defensive guy. And then in 19, I think it was late 50s or mid 50s, 1955, he realized, you know, that because he hadn't really focused in on his career, that he wasn't going to get it done. You know, this wasn't working the way he was doing it. And nobody really wanted to see a defensive dude that couldn't punch. So he got with a different trainer, altered his style, and refocused, and ended up winning the lightweight title and defending it 11 times. So it can be done. You can refocus. If the talent is there,
right.
The mental focus is there, then you can do it. So we'll see. You know, seeing is believing, but I'll tell you this. If he's going to be on TV or promoters are going to promote him, would you take a chance on him making 135 or trust him to make 140?
I trust him to make 140.
Yeah, he might show up at 160.
And, you know, let me add a little bit to what you were saying back in, you know, with that particular fighter, you know, and other fighters that have done this, you know, where it can be done. You're absolutely right. But the only defect about that is that these fighters were fighters at that time. You know what I mean? Where there was a hunger. There was a strive to be the best. Where a lot of these fighters nowadays, it's all about cash money in my face, baby. That's all I care about. Let me, you know, whatever I got to do, give me the biggest fight. It's not about the blue collar of boxing. That's what a lot of fight fans tune in to boxing. You're a blue-collar guy, you know what I mean? If you're an iron worker or a union plumber, you're a mechanic or a car wash dude, you know, if you bust tables or you're a bartender, you cut lawns for a living, you're able to relate to these blue-collar guys because they come from the same neighborhoods you come from, you know? That's what boxing needs to go back into. That's what we need in the sport. And it goes back to in building our fighters in their hometowns like we had talked about a little bit earlier because you give them a place to be identified with. You need that. You know, when Kelly Pavlik was brought into the scene, they made sure they kept him there in Iowa, you know, in Youngstown because he was the face of a small town. You know, where Boom Boom Mancini came from. Those are things that we need to repair in our sport. And I know, you know, some fans are, you know, hey, blah, blah, blah. And let me go back. 2 weeks ago we had a caller, and you know what, call? I forgot your name. And you wrote us after. You said about the weight, you know, fighters coming in 10, 20 pounds over the weight. I think you completely misunderstood what we were saying. We were agreeing with you that needs to be fixed. We were agreeing with you, you know. But there's so much stuff that needs to be fixed that not just one Band-Aid in one particular area is going to help out this sport of ours that is really, you know, it's on its legs. You know what I mean? It's on its knees. It's crawling right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and too, I think going back to my original point about Twitter and Facebook, and particularly Twitter, what I've noticed is that there's a little bit of a mob mentality that when you have a couple of strong voices, your voice is very strong, mine's strong, Steve Kim is active on Twitter, and there's other guys, you know, other radio shows and things, other writers out there, that a kind of mob mentality sets in, and there's a negativity that is set in regarding our sport. I agree with you. There's a lot of things that need to change. But there's a kind of sky is falling every time somebody, and this goes back to what I was talking about Malignaggi. Every time some fight gets signed, everybody goes nuts, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even some, like with James Kirkland, you know, when I dropped the news that, and we'll talk about him later if you want.
Yes, definitely.
When I dropped the news that he would be fighting in 8 rounders, you know, everybody on there was matching him so tough, you know, and, you know, let's have him fight Angulo, you know, why doesn't he fight in October? You know, let's have him fight this month. He's out. It's like, dude, the guy hasn't thrown a punch in 2 years, literally. Right. And you know, he needs to be brought back slowly. And again, it's that thing of microwaving. But I think people kind of get into this negative mentality of, oh, the sport's dead and it sucks and MMA is killing us and this. Now, I have so many people hate on me for writing that Dana White interview. And all I was doing was showing a different perspective. And I think people need to be patient. You know, you look at Golden Boy and that whole conversation, we'll have that next week with Steve, who's very well educated in the whole subject of HBO and Golden Boy and that connection. But I think people need to be a little more patient and a lot more positive. You know, it's very easy to kind of jump on it and go, yeah, it does suck, and let's talk about how much it sucks. I mean, there's certain guys, there's one guy in particular, I don't see him as much anymore, with the initials BC for his screen name. I won't give him props by saying his name. But he shows up in a lot of places, and there's people that mention him to me. He's just very negative about everything. Everything sucks. Everything sucks. And you wonder, are you a boxing fan?
Right.
You know, because at the bottom of it is, like last night, Jesse Vargas, yeah, he blew out a guy.
Exactly.
Very quickly.
With a body shot.
Yeah, but he's a prospect. You know, I mean,
exactly.
Let him be a prospect. That's what that whole series of fights is about, is prospects. You know what? I saw a bunch of knockouts last night, and I was highly entertained.
Exactly.
Highly entertained. So,
well, that's the thing, too, is that you get these people that say, you know, oh, boxing's dead, it's boring. And then you get them go like, ah, man, this was too easy, this is too fast. Well, which one is it, guys? What do you want to see? You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
It's like the flavor of the week. You know what I mean? One minute you're happy, one minute you're not. That's the way a lot of boxing fans are, you know. And, you know, going back with MMA, you know, it's killing the sport. I did tweet something. Why do you hate on MMA so much, Dave? I don't hate on it. I just kind of point out some certain things that how they contradict themselves. For instance, you know, Mike Tyson is going to be on one of the shows this week. My whole thing was, if boxing's so dead, why do you need one of our icons, one of our Hall of Famers to be there? Why don't you get one of your own? You know, it's not dead. I mean, you need the approval of the sport. You need our fans to go over there. So how is it dead? It's not dead. You know what I mean? And that's where I didn't get. And I wrote to a few, listeners back, and I said, it's okay for a guy that owns a UFC to bash on us, but it's not okay for us to point out the flaws that he's done. I mean, listen, when he's got fighters going to his sport that we know they're over the hill or they're not going to do well. Don King did that for years. And you know what, we called it a circus. But when Dana does it, he's a genius. I mean,
well,
let's be honest.
That Mike was very critical of how fractured our sport was with all the belts. And yet he was an undisputed champion. He
right.
fought all the champions and took all the belts. And then he took on the linear champion in Michael Spinks. And he was the first and the youngest, you know, undisputed champion, and the first in years and years. The sport's been fractured for years, and when it worked in his favor, it was all good because he was able to go back, you know, when he came out of prison in '96, and basically pick up all the belts again. He didn't really have a problem with it. But to me, you know, and this is – I don't know Mike Tyson. You know, I've met
right.
him once. So, you know, I'm not going to speak to who he is as a man, although he's one of the most –
probably next to Muhammad Ali, one of the most photographed and documented fighters that we've ever had.
Absolutely.
But I get the sense that maybe, you know, he's being paid to talk, he's being paid for his time to show up.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, and this is not a denigration on the great Bert Sugar, but when you see Bert talking about a pay-per-view on HBO, he's being paid to talk about how good that pay-per-view is, folks.
Exactly.
Anything else, his history, his takes on fights that he's not involved in, I love listening to that man because he's just a wealth of knowledge. And he's a link back to the way things used to be in old-time journalism. But let's be honest. These guys are being paid for their opinions, and you have to look at it. Again, it goes back to that thing. Just because it's a story doesn't mean it's a big story. And you're absolutely right. If Dana – if their sport was doing so well, then it's doing very well, and they basically learned how to do things by learning what we do wrong. But if you were that great, you wouldn't need James Toney in a fight on a pay per view,
right.
And you wouldn't need Mike Tyson.
Put
your stamp of approval.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And let's get this clear. I've said this from the beginning. It's a young sport. Wait, people, until the fighters, their fighters start looking at things a little bit different money-wise. And we've seen it in their sport right now that their UFC main events have not been lived up to the hype. Another thing, too, is some of their fighters have been caught taking steroids. So there are things. That's what their fans did not understand is, listen, everything's good and dandy. A marriage, when you get married to the old lady, you know what I'm saying? And everything's great for 3 years. But wait until she starts gaining a little weight. Wait till she starts, getting cranky and she don't want to put out. Then we'll see how strong your marriage is. That's when telling the tale.
And there are certain things like back in the day, I think it was the last Liddell fight and Tito Ortiz. And I don't claim to be an expert on their sport, but it reminded me of the 50s, like the record promoters or record producers. They would sign an act and they would buy him a Cadillac, like the Colonel and the King. And both those guys were fighting for some money, but they were also fighting for a car. And if you kind of look at it like that, it's like he kind of pays them like, old school like that. Let me give you a car. It's like, I'd kind of like the money instead. And yeah, their salaries for their fighters do not compare to ours. Maybe on a base across the board, if you're in that league, you're making a certain base, and that's something that we don't have. It's kind of a free market system where, everybody's kind of an independent contractor, all the fighters. And if you're not hooked up with a promoter or you don't have a manager that's giving you a stipend, you're kind of not making any money until you fight.
Right.
And there's the structure seems a little different, and somebody could educate me on this probably further. But it seems like they do, make some good money. As a base. And there's little things they do like, giving a guy a bonus for knockout of the night or,
absolutely.
Fight of the night.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are great little perks that we should throw at our fighters.
But rather than
giving them, the DeWalt championship.
The only problem is those perks don't mean shit if you're only getting $3,000 or $5,000 or even $10,000 for a fight and the bonus is only $3,000. You know what I mean? When they know Dana is pocketing all this money. You know what I mean? And fighters got a smart – I mean, boxing back in the 60s, 50s and 60s, the fighters were not really fine-tuned in the business. In the UFC, you have to admit, these fighters were not really fine-tuned in the business of this combat sport that was, being pushed out to the Americans at the moment. Now they're getting their ducats together. Now they're understanding the business side, the business view of it. And that's what I've said. That's why you're seeing fighters right now. They're not bringing up to par what they're supposed to do because there's money involved. They're like, hey, if I lose this guy tonight, I'm not going to get that, bigger fight, down the road. Money comes into play. Things fall apart. It's the bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys start making demands.
People
you saw it with Ortiz. I mean, him and Dana White went back and forth for years. And I got to think that a lot of it was that very issue. It was, hey, man, you're making a ton of money, but you're making it off of my name. And, and people could say, and I even said this, that at this point they market as a brand. And that's the thing that I think that boxing could learn from, is that we're not a brand. But in the early days, they were marketing just as much as we are on personalities. And they still do to some extent. Brock Lesnar's a personality. He's not, he's their heavyweight champ, and so they talk about him. You know, it's all kind of the same thing. Nobody's really reinventing the wheel here. You know, what Dana's doing, which I think is arguably the smartest thing that he's done, is he's not letting the inmates run the asylum. Now, maybe we don't agree with the pay scale,
right?
But at the same time, you don't really get a lot of, you know, other than Fedor, you know, not fighting in their league, you don't really get a lot of missed opportunities like we had with Pacquiao Mayweather, where the fighters are dictating pretty much, or their camps are dictating how things are going to go, or it's going to fall apart. You don't see that a lot, and that's the one thing, is that they do have somebody that kind of says, you know what, this is the fight that has to happen, and it's going to. And if you want to work for our company, then you're going to have to fight that fight. That's the thing that I really, really want. You know, it's funny when Oscar De La Hoya came out with his whole, I want to monopolize the sport and his thing, and Steve and I always argue. We argued this week on the next round about I want a league. He'd rather we had a bunch of promoters like Bob Arum and Kathy Duva who actually promote their, you know, the sport and know how to build draws regionally.
Right.
And I agree with him, but at the same time, I'd like to see, in my version of the league, and I wrote an article about it called the League of Extraordinary Boxing just a little while ago, but I would like to see is a world where all these promoters work together and say, let's say, you know, like, and somebody actually, another writer just recently picked up on it, or somebody mentioned it. Imagine if Dan Goosen and Top Rank worked together and even, you know, Golden Boy, and you had a card with Nonito Donaire, Andre Ward, and Robert Guerrero at the Oracle. You would sell it out.
Right.
You would do it on a regular basis if those guys fought there.
Well, and you know,
that's the thing that I want.
Well, you know, Robert the Ghost Guerrero, and I'm not really sure where he's going to be holding his next fight at, and he's going to be fighting Vicente Escovedo, right? I said, hey, that should be either at Sacramento Oracle or put it in San Jose HP. You know, I hope they don't put it in Las Vegas, and I don't know exactly where that's going to be. I think they've announced it where it's going to be at, but that would be the logical spot to you know, push it at. You know what I mean? Because they're both Bay Area guys. You know, one guy's from the Valley, the other guy's from the Bay. And you're going to draw a lot of people to come out to watch these two guys go at it, because that's a fight that actually has been anticipated among these guys, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and Robert, to me, is, you know, other than that last fight where he was very tentative, I really like him a lot. You know, I've always been entertained by him. And, you know, that's the guy that's a regional draw. He would do very well up there. And to me, a league isn't so much, you know, monopolizing the sport. It's so much as funneling the talent into a direction. Because, you know, like somebody made an argument at me, you know, well, you know, the NBA is a league. And it's like, no, it isn't. You know, neither is the NFL.
Right.
You know, they're not a monopoly. They're a league. You know, each individual owner –
right
team, and they govern that team, but they have there's an overall system that's going on, a collective bargaining agreement where there's shared revenue, and everybody kind of works together. You
it's
fight
a franchise.
Yeah, if you play inside your division, you know, you're going to play once in their home and once in your home, and that's fair, and everybody shares the revenue. And
exactly.
So, you know, the Browns don't draw, you know, well, whoever they're playing against, maybe they do, and then fans show up, and then vice versa, and that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think a structure like that, particularly if it started leaning towards building regional draws and kind of making everybody carry their weight, so that you wouldn't have, and I won't name names, certain promoters that basically use HBO like a, you know, an ATM, and then don't actually promote the fights, and they just take the site fee and or the license fee, and then just go book a fight in bumfuck wherever.
Right.
That's not going to really sell any tickets, but they already got their money, so they don't have to work. I mean, imagine if you worked a job, and at the beginning of the year, they paid you your whole year's salary. How hard would you work? Probably not as hard as you would if you were working for a paycheck every 2 weeks.
Exactly.
And that's basically the problem right now.
Well, you know, and I know some fight fans don't understand what is a site fee. And let me explain what is a site fee. The casino basically gives you a certain amount of money up front. Okay, to bring an event to their casino, okay? And sometimes you can even guarantee the casino a certain amount of seats that are going to be sold automatically before the event is even materialized, okay? So a lot of times what promoters do, rather than pulling money out of their own pockets, they go for a certain demand to casinos for a site fee. They ask for a certain amount so they can bring this event. Rather than doing it at a regional spot where the promoter has to dish out the money on their own, meaning they got to go to an arena, they got to go somewhere that's going to, you know, not going to give you a site fee, because that's not how they work. There's no gambling there. There's no comps. There's not going to be any a large amount of people bringing in their families to be in the hotels. You know, the arenas and their sole way of making and functioning is being paid to have a venue there and selling, you know, beverages and alcohol and snacks. That's why sometimes boxing is a little frustrating, because of the fact that promoters don't want to do that. They can make their money and guarantee money holding at a casino and getting a site fee.
Right, and then everybody has to travel, you know, and you're really depending on the fan base. You're actually not depending on the fan base to show up. They can, but, you know, all the good seats go to the high rollers. They don't really go you know, some people show up, but yeah, you know, the makes it harder for the fans to get any sort of, you know, good seats. You know, and that there is another problem. You know, the thing that was happening last year that was more of a trend was we were starting to see people, and a little bit of this year, they were starting to bring the fights back to the fans. You know, you saw Andre mm-hmm. Ward twice fighting, you know, in Oakland, and who knew that was a fight town. And people will show up, you know, when they've got one of their own. I mean, I think that's the big thing that's missing, is that, you know, regionally people take on dudes from their town, you know, whether it's a fighter or it's a team. And when you have somebody good, and like that guy Joe Brown I mentioned earlier, he was from New Orleans, and he did very well fighting there.
Right.
These people come out and, dude, that dude's from our town. Let's go support him, you know. And if he's
exactly.
fighting somebody good, even better. And Andre Ward has shown that, you know, when Margarito fights in Los Angeles, there's a big Mexican fan base. He's not from L.A., but kind of de facto is. He's living here, or at least training and working out of here. He goes back to TJ when he's done. You know, that smart promoting, putting a fighter in a venue where people that like him will be able to go see him, and they're making the tickets affordable. The prices always get jacked up in a casino because they're trying to, you know, cover their end a little bit. And that, you know, that again, you know, you're not just buying a fight ticket when you go to Vegas. Nobody just rolls up in
right.
Vegas for the day. You know, you got to get a hotel for a couple nights, because you're in Vegas. You might as well stay for two or three nights. You know, you're looking at a lot of, you're spending a few grand when you go to Vegas. And
absolutely.
This is a blue-collar sport, man. Not everybody can afford that. I mean, look at how many fights are in Vegas, you know, or in casinos in November. That's
exactly.
going to be rough, man. I'd
it
like
is.
To go to a lot of those fights, but, you know, it's not easy to travel. You know,
nope.
It's not like I'm the richest man on the planet.
Hey, me and you both. Me and you both, man. You know, and especially with the economy and the way things are looking ahead for us, is just not looking too good. You know, we didn't have a chance, and last week we do apologize for not, you know, being on the air. And thank you, everybody that was sending emails and asking what was going on. And like I said, things pop up. You know, it's the thing, little thing called life. We all live it. So, and we didn't have a chance to talk about the past weekend fights on pay-per-view. But in the press conference, we did have a chance to hear Victor Ortiz call Brandon Ruiz Bam Bam a tune-up fight. And he said, you know, and kind of shrugged that off. But then you had Timothy Bradley show up there and call him out. I like that. I want to see Timothy Bradley get in with somebody. You know, the Devon Alexander fight doesn't look like it's going to really happen, because you got yesterday, you had a per bid being thrown out for him and Kaiser Mabuza, you know, for about that with Devon Alexander. You know, I don't know why that's happening. I don't understand why nobody wants to get in with Timothy Bradley. Let's get him in with somebody. You know, Mia Donna decided to go after Amir Khan, which is okay. I understand that. You know, Victor Ortiz He's still out there. Let's see you get in with Timothy Bradley. Take somebody on that's going to be a little difficult. Timothy obviously needs the work. You know, I'm a fan of Timothy, but there's flaws about Timothy that people can take advantage of. It's there for the taking. You just got to go for it, you know? That's why I like Timothy, because he is a beatable fighter. He's a very beatable guy, you know what I mean? And those are fights that need to be materialized, not protected.
Well, yeah, I mean, apparently he, you know, he put out a, which I thought was pretty funny, you know, there was a press release where he did like a statement basically saying, I am going to sign the contract with Devin Alexander. I'm just kind of looking it over, you know, as everybody's kind of freaking out, is he going to sign it? I still, you know, I started to tend to think that that fight's happening way too early. You know, they didn't, and then they're putting it on hold till January, you know. So neither of the guys are going to take any sort of tune-up fight in between. They're not building the fight. They're just going right to it. You know, again, they're just popping it in the microwave, you know, and hoping it's good. And I tend to agree with, remember what Kathy Duva said to us, that somebody's going to come out of this fight, the loser, and we're never going to get to find out how great they could be. Now, back in the day, you know, you could lose a fight. You could even get knocked out, and you could come back, because you were going to come back early and often. But nowadays, dudes are going to, you know, if you lose, then you got to go sit and think about it for 6 months. Then you're going to take a tune-up fight, sit around for another 3 months, you know, and then maybe step up and then maybe get a rematch depending on how things go. You know, anymore, it just doesn't work the way it used to. And so people are a little more mindful. They're a lot safer than they are. And it's just, you know, ultimately we kind of suffer for it. But you know,
we do suffer for it.
Whatever happened to the days of a guy going, you know, that's the best guy in the division. I want to fight him. What happened to those guys? Marvin Hagler, where have you gone, you know?
I don't know, brother. I wish I could find those guys. I want to know what rock I can have to lift up to find them and stuff, you know. But, I'll talk about a fighter that is going to be hopefully on next week, you know, and he's a friend of the show. And it was actually a fight that he had been calling out for a minute. He's been wanting the fight. Then eventually he said, you know what, the fight's never going to happen. But it fell right back into his lap when Miguel Cotto decided to take a rest, decide not to fight anymore this year and come back next year, which I think that was very needed for him, because he's one of those valiant warriors that deserves a time off, regardless if he's lost. The guy comes to fight. You never see him in a bad fight. He comes to fight. And Alfonso Gomez gets the golden ticket. He gets the Willy Wonka bar, getting a shot at Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Now, if you're a listener, an avid listener of Leaving in the Ring, you know that I'm not very fond of him, of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. I got nothing against him, but I just don't like the way he's pretty much have used the name of a great champion, his father, and gotten away with a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of stuff that I would agree with a lot of fight fans that say has been kind of disrespectful. And now he gets a shot with Alfonso Gomez. I'd like to hear your thoughts about that, Gabriel. What do you think about that fight? Is it compatible, or is this just a mismatch just to keep the Julio Cesar Chavez kid trucking forward?
Well, you know, I put him still in the same category as Canelo, with a slight difference. Canelo actually wants to be a fighter and acts like a fighter and trains, wants to add new aspects to his game. Chavez, it's like, you know, pulling teeth to get him to go to the gym. You know, and he's slowly making a commitment, it seems, to Freddie Roach and to that system. You know, I think he actually went out to Baguio and, you know, in the Philippines to train. But in terms of that fight, you know, again, he's like Canelo. He's a guy that's you know, more of an attraction than a real star at this point, and certainly is a guy that didn't have an amateur career that they're slowly building. But you know, after 40 plus fights,
I was going to say that, man.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of time, and Canelo was around that time. But I think in 5 fights, Canelo is going to be somebody that they're going to want to match a little tough. You know, that they're going to go for a title.
Right.
I think in 5 fights with Chavez Jr. I mean, they were talking about Cotto, and that didn't happen, and it's hard to say why it didn't. I mean, I think a lot of it was because, you know, Chavez didn't show up for camp, you know, and they were only going to have a 4-week camp for Miguel Cotto, of all people. The guy just doesn't strike me as wanting to be a fighter. He likes all the trappings of it. He likes having that name. He likes having the money and the notoriety. But when it comes time to get on the mat and do some crunches or get in there and fight, or even just show up to the gym, I question it. And if I had to buy stock in one guy or the other, I'd buy stock in Canelo. This fight in particular, I just don't think Alfonso Gomez is a junior middleweight. I think his experience, his go-get-it attitude in the ring, the fact that he's kind of rededicated himself, he's been working out of the wild card. I'm not sure if he still is, but he was before his last fight, where he, you know, when he took out Jesus Soto Carras. I think he could be some trouble. You know, he's the kind of guy, he's that perfect prototype that always gives Chavez trouble. A guy that comes to you, throws a lot of punches, has a chin, and is durable. If he can, you know, if he comes in 100% and Chavez comes in less than, he could pull the upset. It's very possible.
You know, the thing I like about Gomez and is that he's got a good straight right. He knows how to use it. After he took the beating for Miguel Cotto, he went back and really kind of looked at his career and kind of looked at the things that he was doing wrong. He got himself back in track. He started doing the proper steps to get himself back into the ring. He had a shot at Jesus Soto Carras, who was a poor man's clone of Antonio Margarito. Okay. Was able to keep it out in the distance. He gets a shot at a shot, Jose Luis Castillo, okay, where didn't really get a whole lot out of that one. And to me, it could have been more of a respect type of thing. Why he didn't blow him out? Why didn't he go after him like the way he did to Arturo Gatti? Not really sure. But with this fight here, this could be the fight that generates enough fuel, enough fire in this kid, okay? Enough wood chips in his gut that's going to just build that gas so that he can explode. But my problem with with this fight is Gomez has no power. And that kid, Julio Cesar Chavez, is a big kid who could take shots and who's got a little bit longer arms, you know what I mean? And he works that body well. Where Gomez, that's how you chopped him down the last time. Cotto chopped him down with body shots. And it can leave me thinking, hey, can he pull it off?
I mean, I would not make him even close to, you know, even on the odds. I mean, I don't expect him to win. You know, I know we're going to talk to him next week, and I don't really expect him to win. But the real huge X factor to me is the motivation of Chavez Jr. If he's not 100%, if he doesn't work as well as he should, he can very possibly lose the fight. I won't say it's a guarantee because he's kind of been putting in some half effort for years. But I tell you, I mean, the thing about Chavez Jr. though is he's not a bad fighter. You know,
he's not a bad fighter. He's not a bad fighter at all. I mean,
he's got all the attributes. He's tall. He's long. You know, he's got all the punches. He doesn't seem to hit hard in terms of like knockout power, but he's got, like, heavy hands, you know? And if he keeps laying them on you, he's going to wear you down. That, and he's got a really good chin, apparently, although I haven't seen him in with a real puncher. So
exactly. The thing about Chavez Jr. is he's not a bad fighter, but we don't know how good of a fighter he can be because he hasn't really fought anybody that can make us go, oh, okay, we got something here. You know, where in the beginning, just like his brother, in the beginning, when they were really showcasing him, people were excited because he was blowing guys out, and that's what he was supposed to do. But after a while, when you're fighting all the taxi drivers of Mexico, you know, and you're beating up all the waiters from L.A., bro, you gotta step it up. I mean, get a construction guy out of a site. You know what I'm saying? Get a guy that has a hammer. You know what I mean? Get a plumber that's got a cast iron pipe. You know, something. Not just these other guys where it's expected, you know, and that's where I talk about the obvious is that matchmakers, stop making things so obvious. Give us something to at least scratch our heads about and say, hey, did they just pull something over my, did they just pull the sheet over my face right now or what? That's what I'm talking about, you know, and like I said, you know, I'm not trying to be hard on the kid, but I am saying that I don't think much of him because of the fact that I see eventually he's going to step in with somebody that's just going to open up the can a whoop-ass on him.
Yeah, I mean, granted, he's with a company that match makes builds fighters as well as anybody in the world, if not better than anybody in the world. You know, they're just tremendous at it, Top Rank. It's going to be a while before they put him in with somebody like that. I was surprised that they were talking about the Cotto fight, although I always kind of said, you know, one, I said, I don't think that fight happens in December. I just knew it wouldn't. And if it did happen that they were fighting in the same building on the same night, they were going to be on, you know, in separate fights, fighting on the same bill and maybe building towards something. It's going to be a while, and I just think that they're losing a little patience with him, from what I understand, and that he's not quite putting in the effort, and they're putting in the money, you know. Yeah, I mean, he's got to step up, you know. But the Matt Vanda fight, didn't do it for you?
No. No. Hey, let me patch in our next guest. I believe we got Chris Martin. Are you on the line with us, brother?
Yes, sir.
How you doing, man? My name's Dave Duenas. I got my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, here on Leaving in the Ring Live. Hey, the guy that decides to bring the stop sign to Chris Avilos and said, nah, bro, you ain't going to take it from me. How you doing, man? How's everything going for you right now?
It's going good, man. Everything's great.
So I heard you're a CEO, right?
Yeah, I'm actually on my lunch break right now, man.
You know, that's a completely different angle, brother. How did that come about? I mean, from doing that and being a fighter.
Well, I actually got this job about 2 years ago. So, you know, I turned pro 4 years ago, and my pops works here too. So he kind of slid in the hookup a little bit.
I heard that, man. Especially right now in this economy, we need any little money we can get in our pockets, right?
Yeah, man. And you know, I got two kids. I got my wife to to support. So you know. Boxing ain't paying the bills yet.
I'm surprised it's not paying the bills yet after what you did. You know, had a hot prospect. A lot of people were anticipating seeing some great things come out. But then you came along and said, nope, ain't going to happen. You pulled the rug underneath them. Now, after you've done that, are you having a tough time getting some fights for 2011 coming up?
Well, my promoter's working on it right now. I mean, we just fought 3 weeks ago. We fought Jose Luis Araiza. You know, he had a pretty good record, too. And we stopped him in the 8th round. So, I mean, I think bigger fights should be coming, and hopefully the big names out there want to fight me too.
In terms of bigger fights, what fighters out there right now do you feel that you're ready for, you know, and that you think, hey, I want to build up to this particular guy that I think I may be ready for down the line?
Well, you know what? I just saw that Arce moved up to 122, so, I mean, that'd be a good fight, you know. I see Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. out there. He's got a fight this month on the 17th. I'm going to check him out. You know, in my opinion, those are the two guys that I would like to fight. You know, whether or not we'll get those fights, that's another thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go ahead, Gabe.
Heading into that... into that fight with Avalos, I mean, you seemed very confident. You just knew that you were all wrong for him. What about him that gave you that confidence? Or did you say, had you seen a lot of tape of him? What was it that you knew that the rest of us didn't?
Well, like I told Showtime, man, he just came forward. He really, like, if he didn't get his way when he was fighting Giovanni Caro, I thought Giovanni Caro was getting the best of him, you know, up until Avalos landed that big shot. And I knew that he wasn't going to be able to land that big shot on me. So I frustrated him the same way Giovanni Caro was doing for 3 rounds.
I'm curious because I didn't know much about you heading into the fight, you know. And I think a lot of people that maybe listen, you know, he's not the most power-punching guy. And that we all kind of thought it was going to take that kind of guy to take him out. Can you just tell us a little bit about how you got into boxing, where you began this love of the sport, how you came to this spot, how you came to this point in your career?
It was after I didn't make grades for soccer in high school, and my dad wanted to keep me busy. You know, he's like, you want to learn how to defend yourself? I said, yeah. And I just loved it immediately, you know. I remember my first sparring match. I made this guy's nose bleed, and from there I was hooked, man. And just little by little, I mean, I didn't do too many amateur fights because I couldn't get fights because I was so small and I was already old, you know. I started fighting at 15, 16, and I was weighing 112.
Hmm.
So
just from there?
I mean, Yeah, and you know, I got my, like, my experience, I think, mainly just sparring, you know, TJ, San Diego.
You just kind of learned on the job, basically. That's crazy. So, at this point, have you had any offers to take on anybody, or has Showtime said, hey, we want you back on?
Immediately after our fight with Avalos, they asked us about the Bantamweight tournament, and and that's something, you know, my manager and my promoter, they kind of shed away from it. I mean, I would have liked to have done it. I think I'm actually at the same level, if not better, than those guys at 118. But that's I mean, I let them do their job, and, you know, I'll work at what I have to do.
Chris, let me ask you, though. I mean, did you question that decision? I mean, I understand you let them do their job, but your job is to make fights happen and win them. And wouldn't that have been the best opportunity to get the exposure that you need?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would, man. But, you know, like I said, man, I told Jorge Marron, my manager, Sergio Melendrez, I was like, you know what? I trust you guys. I trust you're making the right decision.
Hello? Did we lose him? Chris, you still there? Gabe?
Yeah, it's just that bad.
I think we lost him now, because I know he's in the building. We can't hear you. Okay, there you go. You just came in. There you go. Okay, what were you saying, brother? I'm sorry.
Okay,
we lost
like
you for
said,
a moment.
Man, okay, yeah. Yeah, man, I put it in his mind. I said I trust them, and, you know, they're going to guide my career to where they, you know, to where they want it, you know?
Uh-huh.
But it's something I did want, man. Don't get me wrong. I want to fight Ander Mares. I want to fight Victor Chinian. I want those guys, man. I want to prove that I'm the best.
Absolutely, you know, and I'm sorry, Gabe, I'm just asking this one question. In terms of your management saying no to that, you know, beating him in the bantamweight tourney, which is, like I said, the exposure would have been great. But in terms of really not knowing you, like how Gable said it, I could see why they wouldn't want to put you in it right now, because of the fact that do you feel there is room to improve before you step in with the bigger names?
Definitely, man. I mean, I'm getting better, like, you know. Every time, like every fight, I feel better. You know, I've been stopping guys lately, you know, something that didn't happen in my first couple fights, you know. So, you know, like, there's always room for improvement.
Absolutely.
You don't think it's necessarily a thing that you don't have any power. It's just that you're just kind of learning how to finish guys. You're learning how to get guys out of there. That there's just constantly something being added.
Yeah, you know, like, if they say I don't have any power, you know, that I'm pretty sure they're wrong, man. You know, I feel the pop. I can keep guys off me, and if you see me fight, most of the time I'm the one pressuring. You know, so
absolutely, man.
Were you worried at all that you weren't going to get the decision? I wasn't sure. I mean, to me, it seemed like very clear that you won, but
it was
kind of the name coming in, you know.
Well, you know what? We were celebrating as soon as the fight finished. But when they announced the split decision, we panicked a little bit. I gotta say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have too. It would have been the first time, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So,
are you interested in giving him a rematch? Is that something that's been talked about at all, or they're not even gonna deal with you for a little while?
Yeah, immediately after the fight, he asked for a rematch. I said yes, but that was the last I've heard of it, you know, and. He's more than welcome to have a rematch. You know, I think the same result, if not better, for me. But it's up to him. It's up to their camp.
Now, last I've heard of it from his side or your guys' side, where your manager
Yeah, from his side. You know, like my manager never told me anything after that, so I was like, all right, you know. And we took a fight right after, you know, 3 weeks. I mean, 4 weeks later, I believe it was. No, 6 weeks. My bad.
What name and what date are we looking at to see you get back into action, even on TV?
Well, they were supposed to give me an answer today. It didn't happen, so I'm just waiting. But, you know, I want to fight before the year's over, definitely.
Well, brother,
how hard is it to balance what you do for a living and training? I mean, does it get in the way, or what's your structure in terms of training and work?
Well, I mean, like, the main thing is at home, I have a great support system, you know, my family, my dad, my wife, she's, like, real cool with it, you know, so I run in the mornings, I train in the mornings, and I come to work, you know, and, like, right now, I'm on a little vacation from training, but for the most part, that's my schedule, man. It's a little tough, but, I mean, we learn to deal with it. It's been a while already.
Now, in terms of what you do, what is it? Are you CO-ing adults, or is this juveniles?
These are adults, man. We got U.S. Marshals and ICE detainees, so it's like a kind of double-sided facility.
So when you go back from work, you know, with the whole fight with Chris Avilos, what was the reception like, man? I mean, do the inmates know that, hey, man, the CEO is a boxer? You better watch it.
Yeah, you know what? They do, but they don't have any premium channels, so they didn't watch the show box fight. But they do watch the fights on Telefutura, which is a trip, you know. So I come back to work, and they're like, hey, CEO, we saw you on the TV. And we're like, oh, you know, I try to brush it off a little bit, try to ignore it, but, you know, they ask me questions.
And nobody's how about the co-workers, man? How are they looking at that, you know?
Oh, man, I mean, I get a good reception here at work, man. You know, everybody's so cool, you know. It was like, hey, what's up, champ? You know, every time, man, like, I don't have any negative feedback on that. Everybody's really cool, you know. So I can't complain.
You know, that's a completely different storyline of a fighter. You know what I mean? I mean, you're a CO, you're working at a correctional men's facility, and you're a fighter and you're a family man at once. I gotta wish you all the luck, brother. I hope everything keeps going your way. I hope you keep prospering and you keep moving forward, and you keep continuing racking up the victories and stuff. And I appreciate you coming on Leaving the Ring and speaking to us.
Yeah, man. Thank you, man. No problem.
Absolutely.
All
right,
thank you so much, man.
You take
all
care.
Appreciate it, man. All right, bye-bye.
What a class guy.
Yeah, you know, for me, I didn't know whether I was going to like him because he was a CEO, you know.
Jeez, yeah, personal bias. It is kind of funny. Usually the boxers are the ones, that were staying there, not working there.
right, man. But you know what? Any story is a good story, you know.
Yeah, that's
and
funny.
Gotta wish him the best and stuff. We did have another guest, is Jose Reynoso, but our PR, she can't get a hold of him. She's calling. So Joe, if you're out there, we are trying to get a hold of him. We're gonna keep working and stuff to get him on. Joe Sarate is one of our other guys that work for Leaving in the Ring. Quick announcement. I haven't released this, but I'll say it here on Leaving the Ring right now. But we're going to be releasing the Leaving in the Ring Español. We got three co-hosts that are fluent in Spanish. They only speak Spanish. And they're going to be doing interviews with a lot of fighters and stuff. And, yes, Kirtland right now, brother. And they're going to be speaking a lot of Spanish-speaking fighters. They're going to bring you a different view, their perspective of the sport and stuff, and it's all going to be Spanish-speaking. I know a lot of people have hit us up saying, hey, you know, are you guys ever going to translate what you guys are saying in Spanish? So just look for it. It should be out within 2 or 3 weeks, Leaving the Ring Español. Anyways, going back
to I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too.
I think that's a great idea, dude, and it's really, you know, it isn't fair, you know, and that there's only like the English language, and we kind of ignore one of the biggest populations, you know, and biggest, of fight fans and the Mexican fans. So, dude, props to you for coming up with the idea and executing it. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, you know, and we do have a lot of listeners that do, you know, they speak English and they listen, they, you know, understand English, but at the same time, they speak Spanish and they want to hear, you know, our native tongue and stuff to be spoken so they can, you know, if you're a hardcore boxing fan, you don't care what it is. You know what I mean? You're going to tune in and listen to it, you know, and I thought it was needed really big time in our sport to really honestly show what this sport is not missing a beat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's exciting, dude. I don't really know of any other show that does that. So again, you know, it's innovative, it's different, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
And
even
you know,
I don't
Joe,
speak any Spanish at all.
and Joe is who is with Leaving in the Ring. He's going to be one of the co-hosts, so he's a great guy, very knowledgeable in the sport. Primera Round Magazine's backing it up, and we're going to be giving away magazines every week to the listeners so that they can keep updated. You know, that Primera Round Bilingual Magazine is a great magazine. I don't know if anybody's had a chance to take a look at that, man, but it's a great magazine. You know, there's a lot of cover. The pictures are fantastic. It's not in the ring format. It's a little bit different. It's kind of hard to explain. You got to see it. So
it's not owned by a promoter, you mean?
Yeah, it's not owned by a promoter and stuff. And it's not owned by Lou DiBella. I heard Lou bought out Boxing Digest and stuff. But really quick, because we still got the – that's what I heard. That's the rumor right now. You know, don't quote me on it and stuff. But really quick, James Curlin, and then we got to move on. We got to get the Sergio Martinez interview up. And at the same time, we do got to fit in another interview, and Joe's telling me that he is available. So go real quick, brother. Tell us how it went, man, with James Curlin.
It was exciting, man, and I have to throw, you know, thank yous to Steve Kim and Cameron Duncan and Mike Miller, who are the two managers of James Curlin, who I've known for quite some time, covered him pretty much before anybody was really covering him, other than a writer named Michael Swan, who had beaten me to the punch. I got to talk to him literally, I would say, an hour to 2 hours after he was released from prison, as he drove from San Antonio to the halfway house in Austin, Texas, where he'll be for the next 3 months. If he has good behavior, he might actually be able to leave after a month. And it was just a tremendous experience to be able to talk to him. To get an exclusive like that, but you know, to be the first guy to talk to him. But James seems, you know, like I said, I talked to him a lot, and the thing that really threw me the most about the interview was that he seemed very different. He was very lighthearted, joking. Granted, you know, it's the day that he got out of the joint, so
right.
He was pretty damn happy in general. But there was a lightness to him that wasn't quite there, you know, that wasn't there before. Maybe it was in his personal life. I've heard he's kind of, once you really get to know him, he's a jokester. But he was just so happy and relaxed, and he did seem like he'd learned from what he did, you know. Basically, the mistake that he made, and you can read the story. It's called The Return of James Curlin. It's on Max Boxing right now. What happened was, you know, he had been convicted of aggravated assault in 2003. He was a felon. He did time, 2 years, and he was still on probation. And he had been robbed, is what he told me, in front of his home, in his car, at gunpoint by a masked gunman. And, you know, being an ex-con, you know, I think there's a little bit of that, being from a poor neighborhood. He didn't trust the cops to help him out.
Right.
And because he couldn't describe anything. You know, he was so scared, he didn't know what the color of the car was. He didn't see the guy because he had a mask. And so he went to a gun show to buy a gun. And he knew that he's a felon and he can't have a gun. And so it was a federal offense. But he went anyways, and the guy told him that he did a background check on him and that he checked out. And so he's like, oh, well, good, you know, gets the gun. And then he goes home, and everybody's like, dude, you're a felon. You can't have a gun. He's like, but the guy checked me out. So he goes back, and this is the second part where he really screws up. The first part, buying the gun, was probably number one. He basically told the guy a story and said, well, I went to somebody else to buy another gun, and that guy told me, you know, he basically made up that he had a pending domestic violence case.
Uh-huh.
And that the other guy told him, well, you have a case pending after doing a background check, and I didn't check out, but you sold me a gun. You know, why did you? Did you actually check me out? The guy got kind of uppity because he realized he hadn't done his P's and Q's. undercover ATF agents were there at the gun show. They came up, became this thing. So James fled. And it was unclear whether or not he just booked it or they basically, he said they didn't hook him and book him right there, kind of let him go. And so he left, and then they pulled him over. It wasn't really a traffic stop. It was basically they followed him and pulled him over. And he was done. You know, he's been in jail ever since. Hadn't been able to throw a punch in prison or jail since April of 2009. Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't, you know, because of, he's a lethal weapon, you know, and they didn't want him doing that in there. So he's been able to kind of work out. He kept his weight down to about 172. The biggest question coming out is, will he be with Ann Wolf still? He's still with Fox Billingsley, who's the other trainer, who's been with him since he was 6 years old. Ann's been there since, I think he was nine. They're very close. She's the one that really conditions him, motivates him, brings that animal that you see out of him, and really understands him. And she didn't exactly say what it was, but, you know, I interviewed Ann a few months ago, and she had alluded that there was kind of a rift. If I had to guess, I would say maybe she stopped visiting, or they had an argument and she stopped visiting and they didn't patch it up. And so there was a little bit of an abandonment feeling there of, like, you know, my number one homie didn't show up when I needed the most.
I think it's purely a guess.
You know?
Right. You know, so. I was talking about this a little earlier before you came on, and my thought was that it's almost like that motherly love, you know, where I need to teach this child a lesson, you know, where we're talking about two people that were really religious when they were down from in California, in Oakland, in their open workout. They had Christian music playing, you know, on the speakers. And it could be to me where she's like, you know what, I've done everything possible to stray you on the right path that you're not learning anything. Maybe you need to be on your own to see the world for what it really is, and I can't be there anymore when you're self-destructing yourself. That could be the thing, you know. It'd be a shame to see them walk away from each other because they were so good for each other, you know.
Oh, dude, yeah. To me, I really just can't see them not together. You know, I just think of one and I think of the other, and you know. I can't even think of the amount of times I've interviewed him. I think it's been about six, and I've interviewed her a few times, a couple times. And that was always that connection. You know, that was the person that he always talked about. He's the person that she always talks about. And they're inseparable, you know. And I bring up the number not to say, you know, I've always had him or whatever, anything like that. It's just that's the amount of times that I've gotten to know him that's the impression I got. And I just, to me, what was weird about the interview was that he was basically saying, like, I've kind of moved on, and I think I want to get a new trainer. But then when I asked him, do you think anybody else can bring out what she brings out in you and push you the way she does? And his voice kind of, you know, lit up, and he basically said no. You know, no one else can. Like, she just really brings it and this and that, but then kind of stopped and said, you know, that he was going to kind of move on. He kind of pulled back, but I got the sense that he understands he's going to be a different guy, and my big concern for him is that what happened to Joel Julio or Acelino Freitas, when they kind of changed the style, and maybe somebody tries to, you know, you need to box a little more, or somebody else comes in and tries to give a take on a style that was developed from age six, that he's not, the thing that makes him might go away.
Right.
You know?
No, I agree.
I agree. I'm a little worried about that. I'm a lot worried about that, to be perfectly honest. You know, I've never been ashamed to say that, you know, I am a boxing writer, but I'm definitely a fan of this guy, and I'm pulling for him.
Absolutely.
So they're going to bring him back slow. He's going to come back December 4th, I believe, or December 18th. It's looking more like the 4th. And he'll fight an eight-rounder, and it'll probably be off TV. They're going to bring him back nice and slow, see where he's at, get his weight down, and then unleash him sometime next year.
Yeah,
you know,
I want to see what they do with him because I know you're sold on him. I'm not really sold on him yet. I see a lot of flaws that can be taken advantage of and stuff. But we got to move on. You know, New Blood Series for Thompson Promotional is back at the DoubleTree Hotel in Ontario, California, October 8th. headlining Riverside star Alberto Herrera against San Diego Chris Chapman. If you guys have not had a chance to go see the Thompson promotional card, the Blood Series, you got to go check it out. It's fun. You know, it's always a packed house, and they always bring a good showcase of fights there for the fight fans to salivate about. Nonito Darniz back in action. He's going to be on the Gomez and Chavez undercard against former WBA bantamweight champion Vladimir. And bear with me here. It's Cedar Conco. Yeah, Cedarinko.
Oh, no.
On December 4th. Okay, I don't get that one, but okay. I'm going to move on, and we're going to put up the Sergio Martinez interview. We had to do a pre-recording because of what happened last week. So the audio is good, but I got to warn you, the manager, Samson, had some stuff to say at the end. It's a little harder to listen. I'll repost that part, which is at the end, when Samson starts talking. And I'd probably have to put some, captions in the bottom so you guys can see what he was saying. Because I know that part's a little hard to hear because there was something going on with their cell phone, man. Their cell phone was just off the hook. And Z did a translation. She did a fantastic job. So here we go, man. And I hope you guys enjoy it. And while you guys go to enjoy the interview, me and Gabe are going to take a quick break.
Como el peso medio. siempre tendré complicaciones para encontrar rival. Lo tengo asumido.
The response is very similar to the previous one. He says I believe that I'm a complex boxer, and because of that, I have always had problems finding opponents. Yes, and that goes beyond that's independent of me having a title or not. I always have problems finding opponents, and it is something that I have in mind and I'm aware of.
Okay, fair enough. I'm curious, though, you're the 160-pound champion. You're the middleweight champion, and you're not just a belt holder. You're the man who beat the man historically. So why did you take this fight at 157, and why do you think the Williams asked for you to take this fight at 157?
Él es el que es campeón de las 160 libras. No solamente campeón, sino que es el hombre que derrotó al hombre, que derrotó al hombre. O sea, que es algo histórico. Porque sucede que a pesar de eso, la pelea con Paul Williams es en las 157 libras y no en 160. ¿Y por qué crees que él pidió ese peso?
Peleamos en las 157 porque William así lo necesita, intentará sacar ventaja de cualquier manera. Y como sé que soy mejor que él en 154 o 160, por eso estoy aceptando sin inconvenientes este combate.
He says we are fighting at 147 because that's the way that because we Paul Williams needs that. He will try to take advantage in any possible way that he can. But I know that I'm better than him at 154 or at 160, and I'll prove it, and that's why he didn't have problems fighting at 157.
You know, in his fight with Kelly Pavlik, he didn't gas out. His fights previous to Kelly Pavlik, when he stepped in with Paul Williams and even with Kermit Cintron, it always seems like one half of the fight is always better than the other. Is that something he's been working on the stamina department? Has he worked on that stamina department?
En su pelea con Chris Carlisle, en donde no pareció que se cansaste en ningún momento. Sin embargo, en las peleas con Paul Williams y Kermit Cintron, la primera mitad de la pelea parecía diferente de la segunda mitad. Es, ha sido algo en lo que has estado trabajando en la stamina.
Y lo del cansancio con la pelea de Paul Williams es porque el ritmo de combate fue el más alto de todos los combates que tuve. Kenny Pavlik es un tremendo pegador, pero no presiona y no me sentía agobiado por él. Y el trabajo que hago diariamente es para mejorar eso cada día.
It's something that happened with the fight against Paul Williams because the rhythm of the fight was the highest one of all the ones that I have had. With Kelly Pavlik, he is a hard hitter, he's a strong puncher, but I never felt overwhelmed by him. And so that was the difference, and his stamina is something that, yes, they work on day by day.
Paul Williams fight, it was obviously a razor-thin fight. It was back and forth. Him going back and looking at it, I don't know if he's had a chance to rewatch the first fight. What adjustments can he make it where it's not that razor-thin anymore? Or can he? Is he going to be able to perform in a different mode? Because we haven't seen him. We've only seen him in that one particular style.
La pelea con Paul Williams fue una pelea. Fue como muy adelante y atrás, una pelea desesperada. Y ha vuelto a no saber si ha tenido oportunidad de volver a ver otra vez esa, los fines de esa pelea. Pero hay algo que creas que puedes mejorar en la forma en que te desempeñaste en las peleas, que puedas mejorarlo para esa, cambios que puedas hacer. ¿Podemos esperar ver una pelea diferente o vamos a seguir viendo siempre el mismo estilo?
Por supuesto, el combate lo vi no solo una, sino muchísimas veces. Suelo estudiar muchísimo a mis rivales. Y claro que tengo para mejorar. De hecho,
mejoré muchísimo en este último año y va a quedar demostrado el día que tenga frente a mí a Paul Williams. Lo primero es que estoy golpeando mucho más duro. Eso es lo primero. Y luego va a ser la intensidad de trabajo en ataque que voy a tener. Voy a dejar incómodo a Paul Williams y estoy seguro que lo voy a noquear.
Yes, I saw the fight again, not only once, but many times. I tend to study my opponent many times. He says that there are things that he still needs to improve. But he says that he has improved a lot over the past year, and that will be demonstrated that night, November 20th, against Paul Williams. One of the changes that he says he made is he is hitting harder now, and also the intensity of his attacks is going to increase. And those are changes that you will see. He says that he really feels that he will knock him out.
Even though you're the middleweight champion here, it almost seems like Paul is kind of the favorite. He's the guy with the HBO connections. Do you have to be even more decisive in this rematch? Because many people thought that you won the first one, and you still didn't get it. You knocked him down. It seemed like you did everything you needed to do. Do you need to knock him out to win this fight?
Paul Williams, a pesar de todo lo que he escuchado, Paul Williams sigue siendo su favorito. Es también el boxeador que tiene más conexiones, tiene conexiones con HBO. ¿Tú crees que tengas que hacer algo más decisivo debido a eso para ganar la pelea? Por ejemplo, él dice que en la pelea anterior muchas personas pensaron que tú ganaste la pelea, que lo llevaste a la lona, hiciste todo lo que tenías que hacer y sin embargo no te dieron la decisión. ¿Tú crees que tengas que noquearlo para poder ganar la pelea?
Creo que no va a ser necesario que lo noquee para demostrar que soy mejor porque él hoy por hoy. Por todos los medios voy a intentar ganar por nocaut esta pelea. Es un reto personal que tengo.
No, he said I don't think that it will be necessary to knock him out to win the fight. I believe that I am better than him today, and by any means possible, I will try to knock him out because it is a personal challenge that I have.
I'm curious. You said you study your opponents very well, so I'm curious if you have watched Paul Williams' last few fights. It's my opinion that it's because he fights so little, he's kind of leveled off as a fighter. He hasn't gotten much better. In fact, gotten worse while you're peaking right now. Do you agree with that or disagree?
As you said, tú estudias mucho a tus oponentes. Paul Williams, quizás porque ha estado tan inactivo y ha peleado poco, Gabriel dice que piensa que ha llegado como a nivelarse, como que ha llegado a un plato y no se hace mejor. En todo caso, quizás está desgastando un poco. Mientras que, pues, por el contrario, tú sigues mejorando y parece que estás ya en tu apogeo, en tu mejor momento. ¿No estás de acuerdo con esa opinión de Gabriel o qué piensas?
No creo que William esté bajando de nivel. Para mí sigue siendo uno de los mejores de todos los pesos. Sigue siendo un grandísimo campeón. Y sí que estoy de acuerdo en que a medida que va pasando el tiempo, no estoy evolucionando. Aunque todavía sé que no estoy en lo mejor de lo que yo puedo dar. No estoy en mi plenitud. Pero sí que desde el combate de Williams hasta aquí, fui progresando y mejorando mucho.
I don't think that William is getting worse by any means. I think that he's still one of the best fighters out there in the world, that he's still a great champion, but it is true that I have been evolving. And he also says, I don't think that I am in my peak. I don't think that I am still in the best that I can be. I still, you know, he says that he still needs to, he still has room to improve.
With this founding new fame that you have gotten and you've been embraced from
and through all pretty much Latin countries. Has it affected you in any way? I mean, are you lesser in the gym, or are you more in the gym? Because it's rumors that you've pretty much been on vacation since the Cali family fight.
Con estas formas nuevas que tienes y que, bueno, te ha acogido no solamente Estados Unidos, sino todo el mundo. Esas formas que tienes de repente ha afectado en algo que la cantidad de tiempo que pasas en el gimnasio y entrenando. Puedes pasar más tiempo en el gimnasio o menos tiempo. La razón por la que la pregunta es porque se ha rumorado que desde la pelea con Kelly Public has estado más como vacacionando que necesariamente en el gimnasio.
No, imposible. Mi vida está en el gimnasio, aunque no fuera buscador. Estoy entrenando siempre tan solo porque para mí es un placer y una necesidad. Entonces, pues, sinceramente puedes preguntarme tan solo a mí y ir a verme al gimnasio que me van a encontrar ahí todos los días.
It's impossible that my life is the gym, and even if I wasn't a boxer, I would still be every day at the gym. I need it. I do it not only because it's a pleasure for me, it's also a necessity. And anyone can ask me, anyone can go to the gym and see me there training every day.
Do you have anything else to add, Gil? Go ahead.
I was just kind of a follow-up to that. Is this why you're peaking at this point in your career? You had that early loss to Margarito, and then you've just been on a run ever since and getting better and better. Is this your work ethic that got you there, or is it just you finally discovered who you are as a fighter? What is it? Why are you peaking at such a late point in your career?
Como boxeador, en términos de sus técnicas y todo.
Exacto. Bueno, muy bien. Creo que él es técnicamente un jugador muy bien dotado, físicamente es mejor dotado que técnicamente. Y tiene una estatura y un largo de brazos, que es increíble. Puede sacar muchísimos golpes en un combate, pero muchísimos más que muchos grandes campeones. Eso digamos que se puede decir que es lo que más puede sacar de él. Y después puede ser también que es muy bueno poniendo excusas porque el combate anterior a mí me avisaron 5 semanas antes. Si yo me voy a agarrar de eso, también podría decir, no tuve muy poco tiempo de preparación, el combate no fue serio. Eso no creo que haya sido así. Pero vamos, que diga lo que quiera, el 20 de noviembre le voy a noquear y el 20 de noviembre voy a ganar, estoy seguro.
He said, Paul Williams, technically, he's a very good fighter. He's a decent fighter, technically. Physically, he says that he's more gifted physically than technically. He has a good height. He has an incredible reach. He can throw a lot of punches, even more than many champions. And as far as his comments about the first fight, he also says that Paul Williams is a guy that can come up with a lot of excuses because he himself took the fight with only 5 weeks' notice. So in that sense, he can say the same. He can say, hey, I had very little time for preparation and put it as an excuse and say that the fight was a fluke because of that, same as Paul Williams is doing, but he's not doing that. And in November 20th, well, he will knock him out and win that fight and that will prove it.
Well, you know, I want to thank him again, and thank you again, Campeon, to have the time to speak to us. I believe you have the skills and the skills and the integrity that we're looking for in a champion in boxing, and I want to take the time to thank you very much. Gable, if you have anything to add, really go for it.
I echo your sentiment. You wear the belt in the final well. Keep doing what you do, man. I really appreciate it, and I hope to talk to you again. It's truly an honor.
Fíjate que darle las gracias por su tiempo, muchas gracias por el tiempo que le dedicaste a hablar con ellos, por estar en el show. Dave dice que de verdad tienes todas las destrezas, la habilidad, la integridad y todo lo que necesitamos en el boxeo, en un campeón. Gabriel dice que está completamente de acuerdo con eso, que te quiere felicitar, dice que lleva el cinturón de campeón muy bien, como lo necesitamos en el boxeo, continúa haciendo lo que has hecho hasta ahora y ha sido un honor hablar contigo y esperamos que te repita.
Bueno, muchísimas gracias a ustedes, es todo lo contrario, es un placer y un lujo estar acompañándolos y nada, que cuando quieran ya saben dónde encontrarme y cómo encontrarme que estoy a su disposición. Muchísimas gracias y un fuerte abrazo para todos.
He says that a pleasure is all his to be in the show and talk to us, and that if anytime you want to speak with him, you know where to find him.
Absolutely.
So he thanks you.
And thank you too, Samson, for setting this up, brother. It's great. It's always a pleasure working with you, Samson.
Thank you very much. I'm very, very, very surprised. I have many champions, but
if he knocks out Paul Williams, do you feel that should put you in line of getting Floyd Mayweather?
Well, I believe that Mayweather with Pacquiao will never happen.
Right.
And Mayweather, he would make more money fighting Martinez than he tried Pacquiao. Because he beat the underdog. And that it will bring much more money and profit. So I believe that this fight, it could happen much easier than Pacquiao.
Can I ask you guys a quick favor before I let you guys go? After the Paul Williams fight, please don't take on old champions or unnecessary fights. We only want to see him fight prime fighters. I think that's what's hurting our sport of boxing.
Well, for your information, when Paul Williams refused to fight Martinez is
and Samson and Sergio. I appreciate it, and I hope to speak to you guys soon again.
Thank you very much, and God bless you, and God bless America.
There you go. Thank you, sir.
Like I said, it was a little choppy, and his response was to that when I said, please don't, you know, do what other champions have been doing, or guys, not champions, but guys that are title holders, you know, fighting, you know, unnecessary fights or fighting old champions and not fighting the best. And he said, hey, Sergio Martinez was offered Sergio Mora. He was offered Winky Wright, and Sergio turned him down because he felt it was unnecessary. He wanted to fight. He wants to fight the best. And that, to me, tells a whole lot about a character at the moment. Don't know if that's going to change down the line, but at this moment right now, that's something that we wanted to hear. That's something I wanted to hear. I don't know about you, Gabe, but I wanted to hear that. Are you there, Gabe? He's got himself on mute. Guarantee you.
I have myself on mute.
Yeah. If you want to call in really quick, 347-215-7598. I know the callers that were on hold. I apologize. We're on a fast track right now, like always on Leaving in the Ring and stuff. But if you just, you know, bear with us, we'll get you back on. If you want to call in, what's left is 25 minutes of the show. We can chop it up. Gabe, really quick, what's your thoughts, man? And I apologize about the audio, but we didn't want to get, we didn't want to let this opportunity pass, so we did what we needed to do to get the recording and post it on the show. I know the audio wasn't the greatest and stuff, but what was provided in the short time notice and what we needed to get, how to get it done, we tried to do it. And like I said, I'll repost it on YouTube on our YouTube channel. So and try to put some, you know. Try to spell out what exactly was said if you weren't able to understand it. So my apologies to you guys.
You know, I never really doubted that he would be a really good champion or a tough champion. The guy is just, you know, he was there last night. I saw him briefly. He was in the corner of the guy that got iced in like 45 seconds.
Right.
But, you know, he passed by and then I wasn't able to get in. I don't think he had his translators with him anyways, and my Spanish is ridiculously bad. But he's a guy that is he's just all class, you know. He's just the way he carries himself is as a champion. And I think he's the kind of guy that no matter who challenged him, he would do it. It says a lot – well, there's a lot underneath this, but that he did take the fight at 157 and was like, all right, fine, dude. That's how you want to do it? Let's do
right.
it. You know? And I mean, granted, to me, you know, it was Williams, you know, that asked for that, and
right.
it was Al Haymon, his advisor, that was able to push that through. And I don't know how true this is. I haven't had a chance to talk to Ludabella, and I don't know if he would even say one way or the other. But if you look at it, you know, Al Haymon tied real strong to HBO. His fighters get overpaid; they get a lot of dates. He's got a fighter that's with Ludabella, Andre Berto, who's a title holder. That's really the, you know, the feather in Louis' cap right now. And then you've got him advising Paul Williams. And, you know, that he asked for 157 and he gets it. You know, and I really wonder if that was any sort of leverage there or what was going on. You know, but it doesn't look good to me. And to me, I don't know if we weren't on last week. We didn't really get a chance to talk about this. You know, what I'm calling this fight, it's, you know, it's for the linear middleweight title of the world. It's a man who beat the man who beat the man.
Right.
Fighting at a catchweight. I'm calling it, it's for the kittleweight title. It's for the catchweight title. Not a real middleweight fight, in my opinion. I know everything between
right.
155 and 160 is for the title, but it's not like the champ asked for this. The challenger did. And that's
right.
kind of point people out to the kind of power that a guy like Al Haymon has at HBO, that his challenger, who's not a draw, and granted Sergio isn't either here in the U.S. anyways, he was able to get that request through. That's just spooky to me. It's altering the sport. I don't mind catch weights like in Cotto and Pacquiao because that was for a paper bullshit belt, you know?
Right.
He got that belt in the Jennings fight. It was vacant. Didn't matter to me. I couldn't even tell you which belt it is because I cared that little. This
right.
is for the real middleweight title. And for a guy that Paul came on 2 weeks ago
mm-hmm.
and said, I'll fight anybody from 147, you know, to 160 or 168.
They, exactly.
And then he turns around and asks for a catch weight. And I'm just like, were you lying? Apparently.
Exactly.
You know, it's So I'm not disgusted by the fight. In fact, I'm going to the fight. I think it's a great fight. But that, it's like, why? Why put it on for at 157? What was the point? You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's because Paul weighed in at 157 and Sergio weighed in at 159 for the last fight. So Paul knows what weight he can make comfortably and knows that maybe Sergio's going to have to drop some weight. I don't know, but I don't like it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I don't understand that. I mean, you know, the funny part about that whole situation, 157, and the challenger asked for it, is Dick kind of tells you what kind of a champ that we have on our hands, where he's like, okay, yep. He's really receptive of doing whatever. Yeah, okay, yeah, whatever, man. Yeah, man, no problem. Let's just get it done. And so in a lot of ways, do we understand it? But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not going to dispute it. Just like you said, it's going to happen. It's a fight that I want to see. The first one was a great fight, you know, and the first fight I said it was going to be razor thin. It was going to be controversial. This one here, I don't know yet. I'm leaning towards Martinez, but I got to kind of look at it a whole lot more, you know.
Yeah.
Let me
I don't know. We bring somebody in?
Yeah, let me add somebody in.
Ladies and gentlemen, we now return to Leave It in the Ring After Dark, the jazz edition, with the crazy porn music that always cut in weirdest style.
I'm sorry, Gabe. Are you there?
Yeah.
You know what I did? I hit the wrong button and stuff. I ended up taking myself off and all that. Felipe, what's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Gabe, are you there?
Hey, Felipe. Yeah, hey, Felipe. How you doing?
What's going on? You got any news for us here, Felipe? What's going on over there, man, in San Diego and in TJ?
Yeah, a little bit today. I had the chance to go. Hello?
No, we're here. Somebody's got the radio down. You got to turn that radio down.
Oh, hold on.
So anyways, I apologize to people that were listening and stuff, and I hit the wrong button, so it was my bad. It wasn't Blog Talk this time around.
What's going on over there, man, in San Diego and in TJ?
Yeah, a little bit today. I had a chance to go.
He's got to turn that radio down. But go ahead, Gabriel, what you were saying really quick.
I have no idea what I was saying.
Little things like this on Leaving the Ring, man, kind of throws us off. We got everything on track, and you know, we got to have a speed bump along the way when they think they're going smooth.
Sorry, man. I should have
done something just crazy. Oh, hold on.
So, what's new, Felipe?
Well, I had a chance today to go down to Chula Vista, which is kind of like South San Diego, and had the opportunity to see Mesito Gesta spar Antonio DeMarco for 6 rounds. It's not the first time that they do it. They did it back in earlier this year when Antonio DeMarco was getting ready for Edwin Valero, being that Mercito Gesta is a southpaw. They did it back then, but now they're just trying to get in the ring. They both have fights coming up. Mercito's fighting October 22nd on Telefutura against a tough fighter, Ivan Valle, and then Antonio DeMarco is scheduled to fight November 6th in Las Vegas on the Juan Manuel Lopez Rafael Marquez undercard. No opponent yet, so he just went down there, went to Chula Vista to stay a little bit busy. One thing I do want to say about Tony DeMarco, you know, he's a former interim champion. You know, he's ranked number one in WBC, but being that Mercito Gesta is a Filipino national, he's trying to get his paperwork set up so that he could cross into Mexico, and he was planning on going down to the gym where Antonio DeMarco trained. But being that he hasn't been able to receive his visa, Antonio DeMarco, the class act that he is, actually crossed the border himself, was on the in the border on the, you know, trying to cross for an hour and a half to go and help out Mercito Gesta, because Gesta has a fight coming up. So that just goes to show what kind of a class act Antonio DeMarco is.
Absolutely. Let me ask you, did you guys have a chance to film it? I mean, any film on that sparring session, or no, with no cameras allowed?
You know what? I've never asked if I can film it or not. I didn't have a camera with me. I never got to the point. I probably could film it if I asked for permission before. I have filmed Antonio DeMarco sparring before. But I never filmed Mercito. But I just didn't. I just don't have a camera, to be quite honest with you. So I didn't take it down there. But I don't think that will be a big problem. But it was a good session. Mercito is barely getting into sparring, so he kind of was a little lethargic, you know. But he stayed in there with Antonio DeMarco, and they exchanged some good punches there, and they were getting some good work.
You know, with DeMarco, we haven't seen a whole lot of him since getting in with Edwin in Mexico. And I know you guys are building, he's being built back up and stuff. But that division is so deep. So not having a name opponent, being on the undercard of the Lopez and Marquez and stuff, why has there not been anybody particular kind of pulled into that category of being an opponent for him?
Well, I spoke to him a couple weeks ago before today, and he mentioned to me that he had gotten a hint that he might be the semi-main event for that fight. And actually, he really wanted to face Brandon Rios. He saw the fight between Brandon Rios and Anthony Peterson, and he really was rooting for Brandon Rios because he thinks that he's a guy that he could have a good fight with. He thinks he could have a good fight with Anthony Peterson also, but he just thinks that being that Brandon's going to stand right in front of him and exchange with him, it would probably be a little bit easier to fight than Anthony Peterson before he saw the fight, obviously.
Right.
After he saw the fight, he still thinks that Brandon Rios is a good matchup for him. But obviously, being that he's Gary Shaw and Brandon Rios is top rank and, you know, what they're doing over there, and being that he just fought, Brandon Rios just fought, you know, we came to the conclusion that it's probably not going to happen. They're actually looking to fight Ivan Valle, who is actually facing Mercito Gesta October 22nd. But now that Ivan Valle took that fight, there is no opponent. And he was just told a couple days ago that he's not going to be the semi-main event because now Glenn Johnson and Alan Green's going to be that semi-main event. But he's still on the card. They're waiting for an opponent. I spoke to his trainer / manager, Romulo Quirarte, and he mentioned that there were some names. He wasn't really open to tell me who it was. He's kind of a private guy when it comes to stuff like that. So he didn't really want to divulge anything just not to, you know, jeopardize it. But he said there were some names out there for Antonio to face on November 6th. So we just have to wait to see what they actually cement.
Now, in terms of Bam Bam, I mean, he fought. He's with Top Rank. But would there be an attempt, though? I mean, just to see what would happen. I mean, if they will take the bite.
I don't think they're going to attempt to go with Brandon Rios because I think Brandon Rios is going after Miguel Acosta, who holds the WBA title at 135 pounds.
Uh-huh.
But Antonio made it clear to me that he was willing to fight him, that he was willing to fight. Antonio is willing to fight anybody. He's ranked number one. Actually, there's one person that he's not willing to fight, and that's Humberto Zorita Soto, and not because he doesn't think he could beat him. I never had the discussion with him, but it's just because they just won't fight each other. It's kind of like a Andre Durrell, Andre Ward thing, where they come from the same town. They actually know each other from Los Mochis. They're very, very, very good friends, and they're trained by the same family. So there's really not a fight there. It was an understanding that Humberto Soto was going to vacate that title, the 135-pound title, because Antonio DeMarco is ranked as a number one challenger, and he's just waiting for Humberto Zorita to vacate it, because Zorita has mentioned to him and publicly that he is that he's going to 140 pounds. But now that Humberto Soto is going to defend the title against Urbano Antillon, we have to wait and see.
With Marcito, is the Bella Paturo, is that the route that is going to be continuing to have him on? Has there been any talk of maybe moving him away from that and try to get him on, like, either Showtime or HBO at any point, anytime soon?
Well, the thing with Marcito is that he's promoted by Don Chargan, who has, you know, he's a intimate strategic partner, let's say, with Golden Boy.
Right.
So they have the Telefutura date, and it's kind of pretty cool that they're promoting him on Telefutura because being that he's a Filipino fighter, you know, they actually, Telefutura really goes against having, you know, Hispanic fighters on there. And that's why every opponent that Mercito faces on Telefutura is a Hispanic or Mexican because that's part of the contract. I was talking to his manager today, Jorge Marron, and he's saying that, you know, they want to finish up this fight, and then Mercito's going to take the rest of the year off. He's going to go back to the Philippines, where he hasn't visited in about 3 years since he came to the States. He's going to go back home for a little bit, and then they're planning, hopefully doing something big in the first quarter of 2011, where they would have him and Christopher Martin in both 12-rounders here in San Diego at a bigger venue than the one that's going to be on October 22nd, which is very small. It probably fits about 1,000 patrons. So they're trying to go with something a little bit bigger. It's just that in San Diego, it's really hard to find a venue that would support boxing. But they're really going for that. And I don't think that that fight would be a Telefuturo fight, having Mercito Gesta and Christopher Martin on the same card going 12 rounds each. So hopefully Golden Boy will step up and put them together with something there.
You know, I keep hearing a lot about the Garden, spot where Brandon is from, Bam Bam, and where Victor was at for a minute. Felipe, have you been there yet? Have you been to that where he's – because I know there's a fighter there that you were mentioning to me. I can't remember his name. I don't know if
from
he
– From Kansas?
Yeah.
It's Garden City, Kansas. That's where Victor Ortiz is from, Brandon Rios, and Antonio Orozco, who's here from San Diego. No, I have not been to Kansas. I have no desire to go to Kansas, but
why not? What kind of Mexicanos over there, bro?
I hear, but you know, it's the middle of nowhere, and I don't want to go out there. I'm a West Coast guy, I haven't had a chance to speak to Antonio. Antonio has barely gone back into the gym. He's really just doing some conditioning work right now. He hasn't really started sparring or anything. But I do have I want to go down there and kind of talk to him about the scene back there. And, you know, talk to him about Bam Bam. And he's mentioned a couple things to me about Victor Ortiz. They really didn't, they weren't really too connected back then. You know, they trained a little bit at the same gym, but then Victor left or to California or something like that. So I don't know what his connection is with Bam Bam at this point. But it's pretty interesting that three guys from the same small town in Kansas ended up at the West Coast,
yeah.
And are making names for themselves.
Exactly.
That's surprising. If I was from Kansas, I'd probably end up on the West Coast too.
Yeah. And I think that maybe Antonio Orozco, I mean, he hasn't said this, but I'm pretty sure, I mean, Antonio Orozco is a very smart guy. I'm pretty sure that, you know, he saw these guys come over here to the West Coast, and he did end up in L.A. first. I don't know if he went to the Colonia or not, but he did end up in the West Coast first, and he wasn't able to find a gym. And the funny story is that his mom back in Kansas just started searching on the internet, and he has an uncle that lives in Tecate, which is, you know, the next town over from Tijuana East. And she said, hey, why don't you go check out this gym in National City, which is a suburb here in San Diego. And he went, and he, you know, got along with the trainer there, who is Carlos Barragan, and that's his trainer now. And he ended up going to live with his uncle in Tecate, and that's how he ended up in San Diego. Not because, you know, he was really looking to do anything here, but his mom just found the gym on the internet.
Wow, that's good, man. I mean, you know, anybody coming from Kansas or anywhere on the, you know, we get so many emails, and some people are like, hey, you know, I'm a fighter, I'm an amateur fighter, I want to turn pros. Where do you recommend me to go? And I always say, go to SoCal, bro.
Yeah,
the Mecca.
Another fighter out here in TJ who we're gonna hear a little bit more about in the next month is Juan Carlos Burgos, who is gonna be fighting for the, I believe, vacant WBC featherweight championship against Hosumi Hasegawa, who in his last bout lost his bantamweight title to Fernando Montiel, yeah, and now surprisingly is ranked number 2 as a featherweight by the WBC, and he's going to be challenging Juan Carlos Burgos for that vacant title in, I think it's November 27th, if I'm not mistaken, or late November in Japan. And that's another fighter that we've been trying to get together with Mercito Gesta to spar. But being that Mercito can't cross this way into TJ, we're trying to get Juan Carlos Burgos to go to San Diego and spar him there. So that's in the works. Hopefully I can film that and have you guys see it.
That'd be great.
You actually used the word surprising and WBC in the same sentence. There's nothing surprising about the WBC.
Yeah. You know, and
they
it's funny
have,
because
have me ranked at heavyweight right now.
And it's funny because me being in Tijuana, and, you know, I go to the fights down here, and, you know, being that the WBC is a Mexican, you know, it's based in Mexico City,
right,
you know, these guys see José Suleiman, he can't do no wrong, you know. You know, he's like, he's the patron saint of Mexican boxing as far as down here, and it's like, guys, you gotta really dig deep into what he's doing with these classifications and these rankings and what he does, you know. But to a certain extent, I mean, the fighters can't complain. Like Humberto Soto, I mean, as far as he won the vacant title, and he's supposed to defend against his challenger, you know, within 6 months to a year, I believe, and he hasn't. You
right.
know, Urbano Antillon is not a mandatory challenger, and he's defending against the mandatory challenger, Antonio De Marco, but at a certain point, it works out for them because they don't want to fight each other anyway.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the rankings and the belts and organizations have been around since the very beginning, and I think people go a little crazy about, you know, Jose Suleiman this and the belts, and we need to get rid of them and have one champion, and I don't really think that's particularly the answer. I think we just need to funnel them more to where they end up fighting each other, you know, all these multiple belt holders. But, you know, ultimately when a guy gets all the belts, he gets stripped anyways, and then it all kind of starts all over again.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, if there was
the thing
one
that
belt.
Bothers me is the thing that bothers me is the silver belts, and even that doesn't really bother
yeah.
me because as a real fight fan or you know as a writer like yourself and like Dave, we know where the real titles are. The linear title, we can follow it. We know who won a vacant belt, and then like Berto won a vacant belt and hasn't really done anything to show that he's really the champion.
Right.
You know, he hasn't defined his champ. Well, he has defined it, but not the way you would want somebody to. You know, and I think ultimately, I don't know, like these diamond belts and silver belts, all that stuff, like I had to be respectful to Antonio Diaz earlier when he was saying, I want to, you know, if the silver belt's the same as a regular belt. No, it isn't. You know, it just isn't. And
right.
it's just a way for them to, like they say in The Godfather, to dip their beak and get a little sanctioning fee and or a big sanctioning fee in some cases. And, you know, that's really all it is. I don't think it hurts the sport. What hurts the sport is people not knowing who the real champions are by not doing their research.
And to a certain point, I mean, to the fringe boxing fan, I mean, they want to see a title fight. They think, as far as what I've spoken to people, you know, they just see a belt and they think it means something. Even
right.
Like, you know, the Continental Tijuana belt between 1st Avenue and 5th Avenue, you know, it doesn't matter to them. They just want to see a belt.
You mean to tell me the DeWalt belt is not a real belt? Because all I got is nothing but DeWalt tools. So when I seen that belt, I'm like, oh, man, they got a DeWalt belt, you know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the guy gets a little something from DeWalt, you know, a little money or something. I've never really investigated that belt. But, you know, that is the one thing that, you know, if somebody's watching TV – our sport isn't like any other sports. You know, one, you don't play boxing. You live it, and you're a gladiator. But two, it's always been this fractured. You know, I mean, going back to the very original days of the sport, you know, when there was different sanctioning bodies sprouting up there. You know, it started in England. They made their, you know, international boxing club. And then, you know, Mexico said, well, wait a minute, you know, we have fighters over here. So they made theirs. And it just went from there. Our sport requires you to pay attention a little bit. It's not like the NFL where it's really spelled out for you, you know, and that's really the thing. And that's my big problem with, and I think the reason for, like, CompuBox and PunchStats is because average Joe doesn't really know how to score a fight, but you look there, and I've sat with many a casual fan, and they go, oh, that guy's winning because the numbers down there say that he's landing more. And the numbers never really tell the story.
Exactly.
Numbers actually... In boxing, is the only place numbers actually can lie.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
So, to me, it's just, I don't know.
But that's the beauty of our sport, because if we didn't have all this drama and all these, you know, things that are going on, we wouldn't have anything to talk about on the radio or Twitter about.
That's true. But I'd rather talk about the great fights that are going to happen rather than the mistakes that are happening in the sport.
True.
Yeah,
I do agree with you.
I almost sent Oscar a thank you note yesterday for you know for his interview this week because there wasn't a lot to write about, and I was like thank you for coming up with a hot topic.
Exactly. We got about 2 minutes, and let's squeeze in the fight schedule really quick for the fight fans out there that don't know what's happening and they haven't looked up any schedules. Go ahead, Gabe.
Unfortunately, I'm on my phone because my laptop died this week. A little screen got broken by my animals. So I'm pulling up on my phone. This schedule may not be completely up to date. But
October 1st, Friday, at the tonight, actually, at the Chumash Casino in Santa Ynez, California. You have Patrick Lopez, 20-2 versus Tim Coleman, 17-1-1. I think it's a really actually evenly matched fight, but I like the way Lopez is fighting. I'm going to pick him. On Showtime as well, underneath that, is Archie Ray Marquez, 10-0, versus Juan Santiago, 13-4-1. On the undercard of that is Francisco Santana versus Robert Keeler, as well as Marvin Quintero versus the dreaded TBA. Man, that TBA, I tell you, what a torrid schedule he's been on this year. At the Club de Regatas Corrientes Argentina, on Telefutura, same night, Jorge Barrios versus Humberto Martinez. That's 49-4-1 versus 19-4-1. Barrios making his return after a long layoff due to eye surgery. Underneath that is Hector Saldivia, 34-2 versus Jorge Miranda, 36-9. And in support of that is Jose Funes, 3-0 versus Jorge Carabello, or Carabello, 2-0. And as far as TV fights, baby, that is all we got going. I mean, there's fights going on all over the world, fights in Belgium, fights in Italy, in Japan,
right.
Australia, and even Colombia. But tomorrow, this is, again, not on TV, but it's for the number one versus an unranked featherweight, Punswat Kratendangjang, 41-1. I've actually
heard, good thing David's not in chat.
Steve Kim actually busted that one out, so I've learned how to say it from him. Yeah, let's see it again. Punswat Kratendangjang, 41-1 versus Raoul Lee Lee, 16-1-1. That's actually a good fight. I like Kratendangjang, and I like saying his name even more. Toru Suzuki versus Yoshinora Uchida, 10-5. And Takashi Miura versus Takashi Inagaki.
That sounds like a dirty phrase. You know, like, oh my God, I just poom tang tang on her back.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I thought you were talking about Inagaki. That sounds kind of weird.
At the arena,
Roberto Duran in Panama City, Panama. You know you're a badass when you're alive and you have an arena named after you. Guillermo Jones, 36-3-2, versus Valeri Brudoff, 38-2. Guillermo Jones, who is kind of a double for Bernie Mac, has been off for a little while. Did I get cut off?
I think the show's off.
Yeah, the show's already over. Anyways, brothers.
That was my best show.
I know. Hey, so we didn't have a chance to say goodbye to everybody, but the people that did, it says it's streaming, so I don't know. So I'll tell you what, it's always good to speak to everybody that comes on. I appreciate everybody always coming on, and we'll be back to our regular schedule Thursday at the end of the month. Or if something fresh comes up that needed to be on Thursday. Hey, I'm going to watch these fights, man, on the stream. If you guys want, call me up on Skype otra vez, and we'll, you know, chop it up and all that, man.
All right, man.
All right, brother.
Cool, man. All right,
Liberty.
Peace.
Adios.